Okay, if everybody could take your seats, please. Thank you. Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the December 17th Planning Board meeting, last one of the year. I think we have a full board today, so everyone's in attendance. With that, can I get a motion to approve the minutes from last meeting?
I'll move to approve the minutes.
Okay, I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Request for continuance, Michael?
Here we have a request for continuance for Planning Board File Number 18-0244, a telecommunications ordinance. We request that the board continue that to the January 28th meeting.
Do we need a motion for that?
Yes, we do.
Okay, can I get a motion?
I'll move it.
Okay, can I get a second? David seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. David, is your mic on? Can you check to see your mic's on? I didn't hear you. Good. Thank you.
Okay, yes, sir.
So that is moved. What did we say, January?
That would be continued to the January 28th meeting.
Okay. Okay, progress reports. First one is Planning Board File 180203, formerly known as File Number 2216, 1615 Lenox Avenue parking lot.
And before we hear the progress report, I'd like to briefly read the city's notice.
Oh, I'm sorry. My
That's
bad.
All right. No problem. Regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should go downstairs and register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they are communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item, or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. And Mr. Sheriff, if you don't mind, I'd also like to swear in any members of the public who will be testifying on quasi-judicial items and any members of staff. Please raise your right hands. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth? Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Okay, back to the progress report on the parking lot.
Okay, the next item is on page 10 of the board packages. This is Planning Board File Number 18-0203, 1615 Lenox Avenue. This is a progress report. This pertains to a conditional use permit that was issued for the surface parking lot back on February 24th of 2015. And at that time, it was to limit the parking lot to the operating hours of 7 a.m. to midnight. On September 25th of last year, this board approved modifications to the CUP to extend the hours of operation 24 hours a day. The board also instituted some additional landscape conditions. It took the applicant some time to comply with those conditions and to have the lot maintained in an acceptable manner. They were able to get the BTR for the extended hours of operations that was issued on September 23rd of this year. As part of the modified CUP, condition 3 required them to come back to the planning board for a progress report within 90 days of those expanded hours of operations. We reviewed the history on the property. There are no outstanding code violations related to the operation of the parking lot, and staff recommends that the board hear from the applicant, take any public comment, and provided there are no issues, suspend further progress reports at this time.
Thank you, Michael. Council?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board. As Michael said, we were here last fall to get approval to go 24 hours, and with that, there were some landscape conditions we had to meet. It took a little back and forth between Ricardo Guzman from the planning department and our landscape team to get that looking good. We did not get our modification to operate 24 hours until we complied with all those landscape conditions. They were complied with and to the satisfaction of staff. And since then, we've modified our license, have had no issues, no violations for sure, no complaints that I'm aware of. So this is the type of progress report that I love to be in front of you on where I don't have any issues. Happy to hear from anyone that has any concerns or questions, but as staff said, we would ask to discontinue progress reports based on our lack of noise problems.
Okay. All right, thanks. Anyone from the public here on this item? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing. Any questions from the board or someone? I'll move it.
I'll move it, and I don't feel we need any additional progress reports moving forward.
Okay, can I get a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much, Mickey.
Okay, next is Planning Board File, another progress report, Planning Board File 190270, 1000 to 1030 Collins Avenue, the Fairwind Hotel.
And this staff report begins on page 18 of the board packages. You may remember this is a continuation of the progress report that the board heard last month on November 19th. And just as a refresher, we brought this to the board due to outstanding violations that were issued for the property. At that time, the applicant did not have the BTR to operate the facility with entertainment. Since that time, the board did receive their BTR to operate with entertainment on December 3rd of this year. However, based upon the direction of the board last month and based upon the violations that were issued, on November 25th, the planning department did send a cure letter to the operator, which we included in the board packages. Now, when we drafted the report, we had not received or notice of any violations or complaints. And that was as of a couple weeks ago. But since that time, we have received notice that a violation was issued regarding one of the conditions of the CUP, which they're required to close the garage roll-down doors of their bar counter at 8 o'clock. That's a code issue for bar counters adjacent to an apartment building. In this case, it's the multi-story apartment building to the north. Requires them to shut down what's essentially an outdoor bar counter at 8 o'clock. They did receive a violation for that. We did pass out a sheet noting that violation, which was issued on December 7th, as well as some other complaints that were issued as well this month. In light of this additional violation, we would recommend that the board set a revocation modification hearing for the January 28th meeting and hear from the applicant today as well as any members of the public who may have any additional information.
Michael, can you clarify, I remember this item this year.
Yes, right? this was initially, so the board first heard this application and approved it on June 25th of 2019. It took the applicant several months to comply with the conditions in order to get their BTR to operate with entertainment.
Oh, I see.
So they were not able to get that BTR to operate until December 3rd of this year. So we had put them on the agenda for a progress report in November because they did have some outstanding violations because they were operating with entertainment before they had the BTR issue.
Right.
And so we've got violations as recently as a few days ago?
December
7th was the violation issued. The list below you were called complaints that were called in, but not doesn't look like violations were issued.
Correct. And then starting on page on 20 of the board, page 19, you can see the list of complaints that were included in the staff memo from the November progress report. So based upon the additional violation that was issued, we would recommend that the board set a revocation modification hearing for the January 28th meeting. And we also have Manny Villar from Code Compliance who could answer any questions you may have regarding the violations.
Okay, so, and Michael, on this sheet that you gave us, the open date is the date of the alleged complaint or the actual complaint?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to hear where these complaints are coming from. And 1040 Collins has a few hundred residents that live directly next door.
So based upon my review, and I think Manny can confirm, we haven't received any complaints from the building immediately to the north.
Okay.
So when they were found operating without a BTR, did they issue a violation for that?
Manny's here to answer any questions.
So that was one question was, we know they were operating entertainment without a BTR, because that was on the record from our last meeting. So I'm curious if there's a violation that should have been issued for that, so it's part of the record.
They didn't retroactively issue violations. They did issue a violation in the past for having entertainment on the rooftop, okay, which was not allowed.
Right, and that was the second one that we heard testimony at the last planning board meeting, that they did, in fact, have entertainment on the rooftop, which is without a BTR and also against one of the conditions of the planning
CUP.
Board final
correct
order.
Right, but remind me, now they do have the BTR for the entertainment, right. Are they allowed to have entertainment on the
rooftop? No, the BTR does not allow them to have entertainment on the roof at any
time. Okay.
I don't have any recollection of anything about the rooftop.
Right. From okay. This was the last meeting they were here.
Oh, okay. That,
November
and I wasn't
planning
here.
Board.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Manny, thank you.
Good afternoon. Manny Villar with the Co-Compliance Department. I'd like to clarify a few things. Actually, in the last 12-month period, we've received 22 loud music complaints for this establishment.
I'm sorry. What was the time frame of that?
The last 12 months. 12-month okay. period, 1 year, 22 loud music complaints. Out of those 22 loud music complaints, six violations were issued. It's actually five violations because your first one, you get a written warning. So one written warning and five violations. I'd like to address the issue why there was not – the violation issued for the entertainment on the rooftop was for violation of the conditional use permit. We wouldn't issue a BTR violation for something you can't obtain. So their conditional use permit does not allow for entertainment on the rooftop or the pool area, the pool deck. So that's why we wouldn't, if it's something you cannot do, you can't obtain, we don't issue that type of violation. We issued it under the conditional use permit violation.
Which would be the violation associated with the conditional use permit violation, not the noise complaint?
The violation associated with that and the entertainment on the rooftop is ZV-2019-02794, issued October 14th, 2019.
Right, that's the one we were aware of at the last meeting.
And since that date, on December 7th, 2019, there was a second offense for violating the conditional use permit. That violation is ZV-2019-02888.
Okay, and that was a citation issued, and then below, so if we eliminate the last one in November, the rest were all subsequent to the last planning board, I mean the noise complaints, right?
I'm not entirely sure. I don't have the document you're
here.
Looking at.
Okay, just let me give this to you. Look at the list at the bottom. Based on the open dates, the one at the very bottom was from November, so that would have preceded our last meeting. But since our last meeting, it looks like there were four noise complaints. Not they didn't result in a violation, but I just want to confirm with you that those were all in December.
Yeah, that's the one I was looking at a moment ago.
Since the noise complaint on your report, NC 2019-13090, there has been two additional noise complaints, one on the 7th, December 7th, and one on the 13th, which were deemed not valid at the time.
Can you explain why they were deemed not valid? Can you give us a summary of them?
Yes, sir. They were deemed not valid because they didn't meet the criteria for a noise violation. The officers checked them, and they were not plainly audible from 100 feet away from the establishment. So that's why it was deemed invalid for those particular complaints, and at the time they came in.
All right. So then, just to be clear, in December, we know on December 7th there was a violation for violating the conditional use by having the garage door open. Any other violations in December?
No, sir. That's the one issue.
Rest were just complaints.
That's the last violation. The rest were complaints.
That were determined not to be valid.
Correct. Okay. Yes, sir.
And without obviously disclosing any names, we have a sense about the origin of these. If none are coming from 1040, do we know?
They're going to hear from that person.
Yeah, I think
when we open up public comment.
I think he's here.
Maybe
Okay.
One follow-up question about this violation. Failing to roll down the storefront that faces the courtyard, does that result in a noise violation? Therefore, is the noise spilling out into the courtyard after hours?
No, I can add to that. It's not a noise violation. It's a code violation. That's why I put it in the CUP. The code requires that outdoor bar counters, and if you have a area that's substantially open because you have these, I think it's three large doors that are open, we consider that an outdoor bar counter. So the code requires that they have to shut at 8 o'clock. If there was no
that's just for hours of operation.
That's for the right for the out. It has nothing to do with the noise. It's only related to the code requirement. The outdoor bar counters must close at 8 o'clock if they're adjacent to an apartment unit. If there was no apartment unit adjacent, they would have to close at midnight.
Why can't they just close without rolling down the doors.
They could, but they don't. They're operating the bar with the doors open. That's a violation.
If I may add, though, this for that particular complaint, our officer responded to a noise complaint, and then upon reviewing the conditional use permit, it wasn't valid for a noise violation, but then she identified the violation of the conditional use permit.
Can you tell me what time? Yeah, so time. It was 8 o'clock is when they were supposed to shut down. Do you know the time of that violation?
Yes.
Like how late they were staying open after 8?
The officer on December 7th, related to that complaint, she arrived at the location at 11:22 p.m.
Wow. So it was open at 11:22?
That's correct.
All right. That's a problem. Okay. Can we hear from the applicants? Thank you, May. Stay around in case we need you.
Yes, I will.
Just shortly.
Okay, so we met with you guys a month ago. Since then, we addressed all the noise complaints. As you can see, we're complying with what you guys asked us to do. The original complaints, like we discussed at the last board meeting, was we weren't able to measure how loud we were supposed to be, but we met with the city, with the code compliance, everybody like that. We came down with an exact amount. We locked our noise, just like you required, so that it wouldn't go over that amount. I can't control the complaints. The complaints come from one person that is definitely not hearing the noise inside of his building, but is against our project. And we've totally done exactly what you asked us to do when it comes to noise. And I think it shows that even though someone's calling constantly on us, we're complying with the rules, like we said we would. So even though, I don't know, they come down 6 or 7 times, they found us to be in compliance and not too loud, and we're totally going along with that. Unfortunately, we did hire a new manager who forgot to close the doors one day. It's not that the bar is not allowed to be open. It's just that the doors have to come down at 8 o'clock. So we're entitled to leave our bar open till 5 a.m., I think, according to
correct,
the
but
rules.
You can't. You have to close
the
doors.
It didn't sound. No, I'm just saying it just sounded like we weren't even allowed to be open.
No.
So
just
I just want to make sure that that's clear. So, you know, he was hired. He made a mistake. He didn't roll it down. Ever since then, you know, it's been down every single day. He knows about it. It won't ever happen again. You know, it was my fault. I mean, I should have told him about that, but. You know, it hasn't happened since. So from where we stand, we think that, you know, the 4 violations in the beginning were because no one said to us, okay, this is the decibel level or this is, you know, whatever. And then when we actually sat with code, and I think it was explained to code how loud it's supposed to be, many of those violations would have never been issued in the first place because I think there was a lot of misunderstanding as to how loud it could be.
What is your understanding at this point? How would you describe your understanding?
Well, they came down and they showed us.
No, your understanding. What is it you understand about what you're supposed to do right now?
Now they showed us the they came down, they circled the block, they showed us the volume that we're allowed to play it on our speakers. And I don't know, you could probably talk to it a little bit better. I don't know what they showed us where we could lock it, and that's where we locked it. So that's why when they come down, there's no violations because we're doing exactly the way that they told it to us, and that
so it can't physically go above where
yeah,
you
so
locked
we can't
it.
Go higher than what they told us we're allowed to do. So, hence they come down.
Can,
and they
I,
don't
can I just clarify
violation.
That? So we met regarding basically the ordinance, which says the noise ordinance, which says that the volume of the music cannot be plainly audible from 100 feet from the property. So we went out to the site with their sound consultant, with the city's co-compliance department. Planning staff measured out 100 feet from the property to the north, to the east, to the south, to determine at that point, you know, so everybody is under the same impression that the noise would not be audible from those locations. Then they turned the volume up and to a point where we could hear it and said, no, they need to turn it down. But that was based upon the time and the background noise in that particular instance. If there's another time of the night, it's 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and the noise is less and it's plainly audible, that could be a violation. So it's not like it's set that that's a number that they can have all the time. They do have to monitor to make sure that regardless of the time of night, it doesn't exceed the threshold of plainly audible from 100 feet from the property line. So that's part of the noise ordinance. In addition to that, the CUP has requirements that for the property to the north, at no time can the noise be plainly audible from inside the apartments with the windows closed, and that after, I think, 11 or 12 o'clock, the noise cannot be audible from the balconies.
So a lot of the confusion in the beginning, just so you can understand our perspective, we weren't trying to, like, ignore what the board said, but a lot of our confusion in the beginning was that the rule said that you can't hear it inside the building next door. So we were measuring based on going to the next building. We're like, okay, if we can't even hear it outside the building, then you definitely can't hear it inside. And then what happened was that that was actually a more lenient than the 100-foot audible rule. You understand what I'm saying? So we were saying, okay, our CUP says that the noise goes by inside the building, and then code was coming and saying, no, we have a more strict version on how to do that. So that's where a lot of the confusion came in the beginning, and that's why we met with the city, and we said, okay, we thought that this is how you judge it, and we were judging it that way, but really it has to be judged, on a more stringent level, so.
Right, so your testimony is you put it to the level where they told you to, and you haven't had any problems other than these calling complaints.
In the last month and a half, no, there's been.
Right.
There's
so,
been
Manny, one quick question. Explain to me how, when code gets a call and they go out and test it, what exactly, how do they test and determine? Do they go stand 100 feet away? Do they go to the building on the north? How does that happen?
That's, first of all, we don't use decibels in the city of Miami Beach. It's whether the noise or the music is unreasonably, unnecessarily, or excessively loud. Plainly audible after 11 p.m.
From where? Does the code officer go 100 feet away? Does he look at the CUP?
When we initially go out to a complaint?
Yeah, so when the complaint, like these complaints that came in December, code officer went out there and they determined there was no violation. I'm just wondering, what do they do to determine that?
Well, they park in the area in the vicinity. They gauge the music from, we try to do a 360, we try to gauge the music from around the property, if it's at all possible, all right? Then depending on the time, if we have a complaint, we ask them if they would like us to go over and listen to the music from their vantage point, right? If it's after 11 p.m., plainly audible, we check from 100 feet away, as Michael alluded to the south, to the north, if we can go to the east. And in this particular situation, you probably wouldn't hear it from the west because the buildings are blocking it. But we try to do a 360 approach, and depending on the time of day, we'll go to that location, and if we have a complaint that a lot of times they'll say, come over to my building or my unit, listen to it from here, that's the best of that's what where we want to gauge the music and analyze it from there.
And do your records show whether they went over with the complainant? And then my other question, go ahead.
I'd have to go through them. There's so many of them.
Okay.
I see on a couple of these that they did meet with a complainant right away from just quickly scanning it.
Okay. And they determined there's no violation. Does the owner have a heads up that you're coming?
Yeah, we always pay a visit to
No. My question is when you get a call from a resident complaining, then your code officer goes there and shows up to test it to see if there's, in fact, a violation. Does the owner know you're coming where he can then quickly turn the sound down?
No, they shouldn't know. Okay. Unless they see us or they have spotters looking for us, we evaluate the music before we approach them.
Okay,
whether it's valid or not, we still approach them and let them know that there's somebody called the complainant, you need to monitor your music.
After the fact, but show up, they don't know. So the music is probably playing at the same level it was when the complaint
That's
came
entirely
in.
Correct. We don't.
Mr.
We don't.
Chairman, may I ask a question? So I'm curious. You just said that you don't use decibel levels to measure the sound. Is there a reason why you don't use an objective standard in addition to the subjective standard of whether the sound is traveling in that particular area?
I wouldn't be the appropriate person to answer that question. I could just tell you that the city back in 2006, I believe, when they amended the noise ordinance, that's the way they crafted it. Without decibel readers, it's the reasonable person standard. And again, if the music is excessively loud, unreasonably loud, then that triggers a violation. After 11 p.m., plainly audible. So if you could hear it 100 feet away, that triggers the violation.
Yeah, but that doesn't take into account that one person's hearing may not be different from someone else's hearing. And the subjective standard doesn't seem to be an appropriate or fair way to measure the sound, does it?
Well, if I could just chime in one second. The standard for, and the standards, because there are separate standards for different types of noise in the noise ordinance in Chapter 46 of the Code, is legislatively defined as, in this instance, plainly audible from a distance of 100 feet. There is no provision in the code for a decibel-based standard.
I understand that. I'm just curious as to why that legislation is that way, because it doesn't really provide an objective standard. It doesn't really affect this case or what's happening. I'm just curious in terms of why it is legislated that way.
Can I just point out one thing? I think you hit the nail on the head that it looks really bad to us. We come in for violations. We're disregarding what everybody says. But if somebody doesn't give you a decibel level and say you can't play above 80 and it's has to be plainly audible and 100 feet away, and it's very, very difficult as a business owner. And, you know, I'm seeing more and more people leave the beach and go to Wynwood. And we invested close to $50 million in this project, and the restaurant and the music is a big part of it. We built a beautiful project. We won an award for a restoration. We have a beautiful restaurant, and we're trying to make Miami Beach.
Yeah, no, we understand, and I think all that is admirable. Let me ask you a quick question. Even though a decibel level is not written in the code, when you conducted your sound study to be within, allowable levels, did the sound study recommend a certain decibel level that the system be set? Or how is the sound system modulated to be conforming?
Yeah. So that's why after we kept getting these violations, we called the city down and we said, okay, guys, I'm going to lose my license because I don't know how loud or how – I'm not trying to break the law, but I don't know what level it's supposed to be at. You got to come down here and tell us. And even still, you're hearing, look, we came down that day, but if there's less background noise on another day, we might still give you a violation. It's so all over the place, so we try to keep it even lower so that we never fall into the problem.
And I think it's also and when you go out to inspect a complaint, if you stand 100 feet away, how does the person determine if it's plainly audible? Is that just a matter of I don't hear it or I do hear it, or it's loud or it's not loud?
Plainly audible is if you could hear it from 100 feet away.
If you could hear words, isn't it? Yeah. If you hear the words?
If you could hear the music or the words, 100 feet away, that's the definition of plainly audible.
Sometimes the type of music.
I would ask the city attorney if whether there was at one time a decibel criteria for noise in this area.
I would love, someone to say
I do not believe so.
We don't have a decibel-based ordinance, so I think we should, but we don't. So we got to figure this thing out.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think function for the board planning? Is there some methodology by which the board could recommend to the city? Is there some reasonable way we can recommend to the city that there might be a consideration of some sort of objective standard so that business owners aren't subjected to an ambiguity of who can hear it and who can't?
I think part of the reason why we don't use decibel is that doesn't take into the effect of when you have multiple establishments in a similar close proximity, establishing where that noise comes from on a decibel meter. I believe that's part of the reason why we don't use the
decibel. That is correct.
Yeah, and that is correct. And actually, just to add to Michael's point, the decibel meter has no way of knowing, especially when you're standing, let's say, in the entertainment district, has no way of ascertaining what source of music is reaching a particular decibel level, whether it's coming from the property right in front of me or the one to the right or the one to the left.
Yeah, but these are not two mutually exclusive determinants. Perhaps there could be some coordination between the two to determine. The plainly audible criteria seems to make sense, but so does the decibel level, because decibels are used very usually throughout the country in noise ordinances. So I'm just curious as to why the city's abandoned the criteria completely. Well, I don't think you have to just completely say that plainly audible is one way to determine. Perhaps it could be a combination of the both.
But David, let me follow up on that by asking, so is it the case that when you do these sound studies and the city comes out to help you clarify what you should set the system at, are recommendations being made to you that you should not play your sound system more than 80 decibels or it's going to become plainly audible 100 feet away? Is it as simple and straightforward as that? Because couldn't it be?
Well, I would add to that you as you as the operator could certainly identify a decibel level and teach your people to stay at or below that level. Just because the ordinance is written a different way doesn't mean you can use that as a tool. That's what
right. That's what he said they did.
That's exactly what we did. Once we got the violations, we thought we were doing what we were supposed to do, which is judge it based on the building to the north. Then we got, you know, two violations, and then we thought we had it under control, and then over one weekend they gave us like two more. So it wasn't like, you know, and then we said, okay, look, this is crazy, you know, let's meet with the city. We thought we were doing it right. You know, we obviously weren't, according to what they wanted. I think at the end we actually were, but and they just had to clarify stuff with code and tell Claude how to judge, you know, the sound.
And so your testimony under oath is that you do not raise it past that level where they thought it would be fine, the city.
Yeah, correct. That's why we haven't gotten a violation in a month and a half, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And, man, one question for you. Assuming these are all coming, the complaints are coming from just one resident, is that odd to you if there are violations? Is it normally multiple residents, or is that common?
It wouldn't be odd. Sometimes we have one complaint that the music or the situation is affecting in a certain way, and sometimes we have various complaints. In this particular case, I'm not 100% sure. Some of these were anonymous.
Right.
Who the exact person complaining is, because this city does accept anonymous complaints.
Right. Your understanding is that code would have met with that complainant, gone to where they claim it was a violation and determined there was no violation?
If they wanted to do so, sir.
All right.
We ask them if they do. Sometimes they want to meet with us. Sometimes they don't. It's the complainant's decision.
Right. The reason I'm asking is obviously, you know, they believe there's one person that just is against the project. And I don't know if that's true or not. But and obviously that person, who I believe is here, is going to testify why he's unhappy and what's going on. But it's important to me to know if the code went to that person's residence or wherever they were claiming it was a violation and determined independently that there was no violation. Because, again, you know, you can be accused of a lot of things. If you're not guilty, you're not guilty. But if you could be guilty, then...
Understood.
So you don't know whether the violation, the complaints are coming from multiple residents versus just one.
I can tell you that no one else has come to our property besides that one person. Doesn't mean that someone else didn't complain.
Yeah, it could be still other residents could be
complaining.
And
I would love for code to go inside their building and tell us that they hear the music, because there's just no chance that they hear it. It's, you know, it's...
I
don't know.
We'd have to evaluate it for the next meeting and put that together, because
it's
a lot of research.
Okay. Yeah, I know you don't need to share the identity, but it would be nice to know if it's just one person or there are multiple people. Because
we could put something
relevant
together for the next meeting.
All right. Thank you.
Could the board indulge me for 30 seconds regarding this rooftop that was heard last time, to your point that you're trying to be a good neighbor? How did you end up with live music on the rooftop in violation of the CUP? How did that happen? And how do we know that won't happen again?
We made a mistake, you know, and since then, how do we know it won't happen again? Just the same way that you're judging us now. I mean, you came to us and you said, okay, don't do that. We're not doing it. You came to us and said, okay, this is the volume. We're not doing it. I mean, like I said, we put a lot of money into this project, and it's not to lose our music license. We need the music license in order for the restaurant to be successful. I would not jeopardize that, you know, once I know exactly, you know, I did make a couple of mistakes. I agree, you know, guilty. But since then, you know, really, we've been following all the rules. You know,
you seem sincerely trying to comply at this point. I'm just I wasn't here last meeting, and that's why I apologize.
It was a mistake.
No, you're right. And what I would say to you, and we're going to open this to the public, but, you know, there's always a balance. We want businesses to thrive in the city. And I hear you, there are a lot of moving to Wynwood. We want businesses to do well. But at the same time, residents deserve, you know, a peaceful quality of life. I understand all the noise complaints were determined invalid, but you made a mistake on the rooftop. Now you made a mistake with the garage door. You got to quit making mistakes. You know, it's the buck stops. You're the owner?
Yeah.
Or the man? Okay, so the buck stops with you, and you can't keep coming back saying we made a mistake.
Right. I don't think anything like that will happen.
I understand, but it did since the last meeting. So I'm just saying you can't keep coming back and expecting the board to keep saying, okay, we'll forgive you this time. So, you know, the staff wants to recommend a revocation hearing, which we're probably going to do. So just make sure in the next month that, you know, your whole staff, from the manager to the bus boys or bus women, understand what the rules are, okay? And don't come back next month, say, oh, we made one more mistake, okay? Because then you kind of lose credibility.
If I may add to that, we've afforded less opportunity to other businesses. There are other establishments that have come to us requesting outdoor entertainment. We've denied it.
Right.
So, you know, you need a license in order to have a live DJ in your establishment. That doesn't mean that we're okay or have to be okay with you having outdoor open-air entertainment. That makes it much harder. You're better off having entertainment indoors and not having to worry about the impact that you may or may not have on any given moment. To everyone's point, yes, a decibel reader isn't the standard that we use, but operationally I would most certainly recommend that you do get a decibel reader. In fact, I would recommend that you set up microphones with a recording device that records your decibel readings throughout your entire evening so you can operationally go back to that and see where there might be peaks and valleys in your performance or your DJ, because it's very hard to control noise levels within a system, even with all the controls that you might have in place. The exterior elements, how noisy it is out on the street, as late at night, that ambient noise surrounding the area starts to decrease and your noise becomes more prevalent. So I just want you to understand that no one's trying to pick on your business. Most certainly the privilege that we've given you to operate an outdoor entertainment license, which is not something we give lightly, and we most certainly, I agree with the chair, you can't afford to make mistakes because we're not going to be giving second chances. We need you to show yourself as a responsible business operator. That's only going to show itself over time. And every measure you put in place to help you stay as a responsible business owner, understanding the impact that your entertainment license can have on the surrounding neighbors, is really important. That's what I'm looking for. So, you know.
I mean, I totally hear what the board's saying. I think my actions speak louder than words, because anyone can come up here and say, no, I'm going to do what you're saying. We did do it for the last month and a half. You're right.
There was another violation.
I agree, but you're right, 100%.
We could do better.
But then we could do better, but we took. My point is, we took the main issue, at least, was the noise, and we really took it very seriously, and we'll continue to take it very seriously. If you give us the privilege to continue with our license, and you know, that's all I can say. I think we're a positive for the neighborhood. You know.
Well, I appreciate hearing that, but I'll just add, I'll remind you that when you initially applied for the CUP, there were some neighbors, members of the community, who were very opposed to it. And I even think that I've begun to think about this a little bit differently. You know, some argued it's not a right, it's a privilege to have sound and entertainment. And I think to a certain degree that's true, and we promise we'd be vigilant. So we've got to be vigilant about this. I mean, consider it like two strikes already, so just do better.
100%, yeah.
All right, let's open to the public.
My name is Peter Sabo, 960 Collins, Biscay Apartment Hotel. I've made some complaints, but I understand there's an email that was sent to the director from 1040 Collins Avenue, the Council Towers, opposing this project. Am I right?
That was an email that was sent last month, and I clarified that the project was already approved by the Planning Board and let them know that I gave them the conditions of the CUP and said definitely let code compliance or planning staff know if they're in violation with those conditions, which is that after 11 o'clock at night, the music cannot be plainly audible from the balconies, and at no time during the day
can the music be audible inside the residences?
And hold on, and following that letter, any complaints from 1040?
No, not that I'm aware of.
All right.
If that building had been condo units worth a lot of money each, what do you think the response would be?
I disagree with that. I think we're concerned about those residents regardless of their income.
I'm just saying that that's a low-income housing
social
building.
Social status.
And if you want to pick on weak people who are not very inclined to react to something, an aggression on them in their own homes, like noise, for example, in this case, then you got your perfect situation. You have one big low-income housing, which is owned by the city, by the way. It's city-owned property. You're victimizing.
So are you saying that if these people were disrupted in their sleep, they wouldn't complain? I mean, I don't think it's fair to say the lack of complaints, there's some reason for it. I don't know. I'd rather stick with what.
I'm just saying that there's no complaint. I'm just speculating that the reason, I haven't spoken with them, I don't know any of them.
Right.
But typically, low-income housing people are fearful.
Well, they were
losing the benefits.
Well, they had enough guts to write a letter to the city opposing it, so they're not.
Let me tell you one thing. I did speak with the manager.
Okay.
And he said he gets complaints from the tenants, but they don't complain. They don't pick up the phone and make a complaint.
And the manager doesn't complain. I'm just saying we got to be fair to everybody.
I just spoke with the manager there, and he said he gets complaints from the Twist, from Washington, from this now, and others, and he gets complaints from the tenants.
Sir, we can't deal with speculation to non-complaints.
Well, I'm just bringing this up. You have a huge-sized building right next to this project. It's a low-income housing building. It's 100 and some units.
Excuse me. Whatever it is, we can't deal with your speculating as to the fact. Let me finish.
Then don't. Okay. Just deal with the fact. The fact is that there's a big building right next to it. It's a senior housing residential building right above this outdoor entertainment. That's a big, big conflict.
But you can't ignore that conflict.
It's there. It's in front of you.
My experience,
you were speculating that low-income housing people would be less likely to complain.
That's my opinion. I think so, yes. That's my opinion. You disagree? That's up to you.
I didn't disagree because you don't let me finish what I'm saying. I'm just telling you now that we can't deal with non-complaints as a factual matter, and that's what you're speculating about.
But you can use your common sense and determine that an outdoor club in a residential urban setting, it's not a proper use. And this guy is not running a restaurant with entertainment to enhance the dining experience. No, he's not doing that. He's trying to succeed into an outdoor club. He's trying to copy Ocean Drive. That's what he's doing. And if we don't see that, we pretend it's not in front of us, then...
All right, let me ask something. When you complained, did the code come and stand with you? Because obviously you've heard the testimony. They said there were no violations on every complaint.
Yes, there was violation. I had a conflict with the code officers. They didn't have clear in their minds how to enforce the law. Some of them were confused. Others refused to admit the fact that it was plainly audible 100 feet away. I had a little conflict with them, but I'm telling you, it's not them. I think it's their bosses who are not. They don't have the confidence to enforce it right away. Because that's not what they do typically. They play with it. They use different terms.
You're saying the code doesn't have the guts to give violations?
I don't know. I don't know. That's my. I witnessed the hesitancy. You know, I didn't. They got some citations. They got some violations. But if it was me, I would have given them 3-4 more. Because plainly audible to me, if it's not clear, if you don't know what that means, and if these code officers don't know and not clear about it. We have nothing. We have nothing left.
Right.
We have anarchy.
But let me ask them, if you put yourself in their shoes, they're operating a business, code comes out, and they say there's no violations. What, you know, how do you reconcile that? If you were the property owner and someone kept complaining about you, and every time code came out and they said, we don't think it's a violation, how would you feel if we said, well, we think there was, we think code's wrong?
I would like this guy to be clear about what he's able to do, because I hear him say that he's not clear about it. And he's right sometimes. You should be able to define plainly audible consistently all the time. And then he knows what to do. But if you don't...
Well, apparently the city came out and met with him and did tell him, and according to them, under oath, they never turned the volume past what the city told them they could do. And that's why it's tough for us because, you know, and then the code comes out and they verify what the owners are saying, that there was no violations.
I don't know. This is getting...
So all we can do is based on the evidence we hear under oath and the code, you know. And by the way, they are going to come back because of the violation with the garage, but your concern is the noise.
The least complicated, the better. 100 feet away, plainly audible. Don't make it too complicated. You caused a problem. This guy accused me of harassing him. Only complainer, he's harassing me. If I have a problem, if somebody's harassing me, that for me is a problem. I would be looking for a solution to the problem. I mean, I'm wondering sometimes, what's the solution? Getting me to stop complaining? Is that the solution if I'm harassing him? That's what he said. You caused a major conflict. And if this is a setting where we're allowing something, it can spread through Collins Avenue. This is the only one on
Collins
Avenue.
Let me ask you this. Why are you the only one that seems to be complaining from your building?
Because across the street from me, there's one big building which is contains a lot of low-income housing units.
No, your building itself.
I want to stop.
Are you your own? Where do you live?
I don't live in the building. I don't live in the building where I'm complaining about from. My business is 960 Collins.
Oh, so you're alone in where you're complaining from. I thought you were in a building. Okay.
I'm trying to protect my business.
Got it. Okay.
Because I have a lot of reservations coming. We have a season coming up. And if those guests come and they see a total change on the environment, typical on Ocean Drive, guess what? They're not going to come
back.
What
is your business?
It's a hotel. It's an apartment hotel.
Okay.
Sir, I think you have our undivided attention. What would you like for this board to do?
Define the use, make force them to run a restaurant and not a nightclub, because this precedent can spread through Collins, and you can change Collins and turn it into another Ocean Drive. This is a dangerous game we're playing with outdoor entertainment on Collins. Buildings are right across from one another. Sound bounces off the buildings. It gets magnified, goes all over the place. This is completely improper use. Should not have been allowed. So what you can do is reduce the time. If it's a restaurant, if they're running a restaurant, they shouldn't be open past midnight. Maybe you can change the condition to midnight.
All right. Thank you, sir. Does that complete your public testimony?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else here from the public like to speak on this item?
Yes, hi. I wasn't planning to speak on this, but my name is Daniel Serralda with Miami Design Preservation League. We're a block away, and I'm a little surprised to see this discussion because I know that building was closed for many, many years, and it finally reopened. There was a beautiful restoration project. I know Miami Beach United had a community event there recently. I've been there a ton of times, and I haven't actually noticed all of what I'm hearing now about, like, crazy noise. So I'm sorry to hear this. And I also don't know exactly what the issue is or if it's just, like, neighbors as usual just fighting each other. But I do think it's a good addition to the neighborhood. So I hope there's a way to work it out because we need more, like, lively hotels, you know, in that area and not just, you know, kind of dilapidated buildings. So just my two cents.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else from the public like to speak on this item? Hearing none, public testimony is closed. Board members, would any of you like to say make any comments?
I have a few comments. Really questions for staff. The difference, as we heard, between a restaurant and a nightclub, what is the difference between a restaurant with entertainment and a nightclub?
Which is what this is licensed as, and what they have to be licensed as. So
a nightclub.
It's licensed as a restaurant with entertainment.
Okay.
And part of the conditions of the order is that there is a restaurant on the property serving full meals and a full menu at all times. Otherwise, then it is a club. And then other things become involved, such as distance separation from other clubs. So this is, for all purposes, it's a restaurant with entertainment, and they have to keep that. They have to maintain that operation.
In terms of impact, a nightclub is a higher impact because noise levels are higher or occupancy is higher. What is the difference?
No, for us, it's just a matter of whether or not it's also a restaurant serving meals or not. It's not like a defined level of a nightclub in terms of you have louder entertainment or less entertainment if it's not.
So what are our options? I know you have recommended a revocation hearing in January. Are there other actions that we might take?
Well, really, the only time that the board can take substantive modifications is through a revocation modification hearing. It doesn't mean that the board has to take that action. Sometimes, I'll give you an example. There was another property in Ocean Drive a couple years ago where the board set a revocation modification hearing, and they suspended the entertainment license for a short time. The board can also modify the hours of operation, modify the conditions, but they can only do that when the board has actually formally scheduled the revocation modification.
Oh, so hearing. That gives us the flexibility to make some modifications if we were to choose to do so, and kind of continue to hold their feet to the fire.
Correct.
What the satisfied board, there's a
correct.
Resolution.
I think we're going to have the hearing, and hopefully they keep their noses clean for the next month. And
it has been the case before where the board has set that revocation modification hearing, listened to the applicant, things have been resolved, and there's no changes. But through that whole process, the applicant was able to work out, complying with the conditions of the CUP.
Well, so, Mike, that's been a shortfall in our CUP process historically. We can't take action without setting a revocation modification hearing.
That was my question. Yeah.
Prior to being able to set a modification revocation hearing, we actually have to send a cured letter. So it's very difficult. It usually, on a good day, would be 60 to 90 days just to be able to have a planning board hearing where, if we choose to, can actually act on modifying the conditions. Whether we want to do a slight modification, whether we just want to make sure that the applicant knows the seriousness of the complaints and the concerns that we have. After all, we're the ones that approved it. And prior to approving that, this negative impact wasn't taking place, or the perceived negative impact. I wish we had the ability to modify a CUP strictly on notice of this applicant coming in front, but no, we had to follow that formality of a modification hearing. And that's something that we should look at long-term-wise to see if we can act quicker. When you go to the special master, you don't have a second bite at the apple. You're there. If you're not ready that day, the determination of that special master is going to be made on that day. Here, they're having opportunity to hear our concerns and act accordingly. They have another 30 days before a modification hearing should take place. And I think what's important for them to understand is that should there be any violations between today and that modification hearing, that they're not going to be able to defend themselves, that they're going to have to show that they can operationally control what's taking place in their location, because they were operating without a BTR. They were operating entertainment without a BTR. They were operating rooftop entertainment that's not allowed by the CUP. They admit to the fact that they didn't clearly understand the condition of the CUP prior to opening. So I know they're making an effort, but I want them to just truly understand that they don't get to come here and explain why they created a violation. They simply have to avoid being issued a violation. And I think based on today, they're making progress. But I am still concerned about open-air entertainment in such a large courtyard area if they're not really taking the active measures. To me, what I would tell the gentleman is get yourself a decibel reader, maybe get yourself some microphones that feed to a decibel reader at the end of every night. Read those readings and see if there are any peaks and valleys so that they can further adjust it. It's not a one-time setting. It's something that they're going to continuously have to work towards and modify and perfect,
public
as do many of other establishments end up having to do, because the entertainment license is so important. Just the ability to have a DJ at ambient levels requires that entertainment license. And as I always refer to the city attorney, I can't restrict entertainment in any way. I can't say it's restricted to a DJ, it's restricted to a live band. Once I give them the entertainment, they get the entertainment license in any which way or form they want, and the only restriction I can place is it can be plainly audible from 100 feet.
So just a couple of quick comments. I would echo what Daniel just said about decibel meters. I don't know if you know. It's an app on a smartphone. Everybody in management at your establishment should have that app downloaded onto their phone. We also had good success with a project over on West Avenue this year, and they put a lock on the controls. So only someone in management had a key to the lock, and then somebody couldn't just randomly come and turn the volume up. So we're going to be looking to you to make sure that you're a good neighbor and that you're not a nuisance.
to your...
And frankly...
And I do love your project, by the way. I think you've done a fine job, and I would love to see the entertainment continue, but it can't be a nuisance to the neighborhood.
Right, and like I said before, again, for us up here, it's all about balance. We want you to do well. We want business to thrive. We want you to be a good neighbor. It's very simple. And I'm encouraged, at least, that you have not had noise violations, but the violation for the open garage can't have things like that. So you got to make sure your entire staff understands the rules and that, again, you don't come back next month and say, we made another mistake. That's all I'm asking, okay? And if you do that, you should be fine because we don't want your business to fail. We want to help you, but we also want your neighbors to have a quality of life that they deserve, okay? All right, with that, will someone want to move it for a month?
I'm happy to move it.
Okay, so
for the revocation as per staff recommendations.
Okay, so basically you're going to come back next month and hopefully there won't be any problems. But we're going to set up for hearing.
Can I ask, is a month long enough to like give them a track record to demonstrate compliance?
We can keep on setting a reoccurring modification hearing every single 30 days so that at our next January we can continue to set a modification hearing.
Correct. Right. We have to advertise at least 30 days. We have time to advertise for January. If the board wants to continue that, they can continue that.
And the lawyers will shoot me for this, but you don't need to. Just come yourselves. I know it's expensive to have lawyers, but to make sure that you're behaving, we are going to bring you back at least until we're very confident that you're operating properly. Okay, but you two can show up, and you know we'll get a report from code and staff. So,
But you think that makes sense, guys, just to continue it a month from now, or should we just set it 60 days and just see if they demonstrated compliance?
I think we should set the – because the board does not have to take action on the revocation. They don't have to modify it, but it gives the ability to listen from the board, and then if there was something egregious, you can take action. You don't have to have another notice requirement.
All right.
But Michael –
Mike moved it. I'm sorry.
Is a motion – has it been moved?
Motion, we need a second.
If I can just go –
sure.
So just for clarification, now that the cure letter has been sent – we don't have to have, if we just go ahead and make another progress meeting in 30 days and we are not satisfied at that time, we can automatically set a revocation
hearing.
Cure letter?
No other cure letter, but we'd have to have the 30-day notice. So if you wait till January and direct us to set a revocation modification hearing, the soonest we could do that would be March.
That's what you were saying about
right. So I was in a situation babysitting the Gansevoort for several years, for a period of about a year, and I learned this process. And like yourself, I wanted to not accuse them prior to being guilty. So I'm not accusing them of being guilty just by setting a modification hearing.
Correct.
I'm trying to ensure that should we have a progress report in January, and should there be a violation between now and January, in January I can take action. If correct. I don't set that modification hearing in January, we will all admit that a violation was issued, should one be issued, and should they not adhere to the CUP, and I won't be able to take action in January.
Got it.
And that's
it's basically
be,
to keep on top of their conduct.
Correct. Okay. So by setting a modification hearing, they know we can take action, and it's amazing how their behavior changes and how you won't get any violations. And that's what I learned with the Gansevoort many years ago. Because like he said, by the time I do set that revocation hearing, it'll be in March, and then I'll have 2 months of everything being fine because I set this revocation hearing. So, you know, I have no desire to make them feel that they're guilty in advance of being guilty. We have a brand new operator that has shown some lack of knowledge and understanding of the CUP and the privilege they have for entertainment, and I think they're fine-tuning their actions, and hopefully they'll take more actions with their operational staff to make sure that they don't trip again with this upcoming modification hearing. And keep in mind, that includes the holidays, New Year's, so it's the worst time for them to be coming in front for a modification hearing in January. So it's going to be very challenging for you, I understand that. But should they get through that without a noise violation, then I think that really makes me start to feel comfortable that they understand what they're supposed to be doing.
Michael, is there time to notice for January to do a 30-day notice for January?
Yes, we would send out the Herald notice tomorrow, and the mail notice would be due by next Thursday or Friday. Okay. So we have time.
All right.
So the December meeting is early and January is late.
Okay. All right, Kareem seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Aye. Okay. See you next month. Try to behave. Okay, next is Planning Board File 19-0320, 901-927 Lincoln Road.
And this staff report begins on page 38 of the board packages. This is an application requesting conditional use permit for the construction of a new seven-story hotel addition to the existing structures with a new construction exceeding 50,000 square feet. This is before you because it's in a commercial district, and the code requires that construction over 50,000 square feet come to the planning board for review, at least review, prior to review by the design review board or historic preservation board. As you may remember, back on earlier this year, and then finally on October 16th of 2019, the City Commission adopted an ordinance modifying the regulations for this portion of Lincoln Road on the north side of Lincoln Road between Pennsylvania Avenue and Lincoln Road. Just to summarize some of the changes that were approved, the parking requirements were reduced to zero for new hotel units. It increased the maximum building height from 50 feet to 75 feet for properties with a minimum area of 30,000 square feet and providing a minimum of 100 new hotel rooms. It created additional setback requirements from Lincoln Road and the side streets for new construction over 50 feet in height. It reduced the minimum hotel room size to 200 square feet, provided that certain amenity spaces were satisfied. And also, in order for the applicant to avail itself of the room size and height incentives, the applicant must participate in a public benefits program, which includes providing a ground floor public benefit space and a contribution to the Art and Public Places Fund. Staff has reviewed the application. We did note two concerns, and if you look on page 45, you'll see a graphic representation of part of our concerns. Currently, there is only a sidewalk along part of the property. The applicant's proposing to extend that for part of the way. Our recommendation is the area in red, that they modify the ground floor plan or site plan to extend that sidewalk all the way along the northern part of the property and then back to Lincoln Road. This is also consistent with the recommendation that I passed out to you from the Transportation Department after evaluating a pedestrian circulation study. So we're recommending that expanded sidewalk to connect possibly to the future redevelopment of the site to the west. And our second concern is regarding the location of the public benefit space, which is the area in blue on the plans on page 45 of the board packages. We're recommending that be relocated to a more prominent location and subject to the review of the Historic Preservation Board. With those minor modifications, we are recommending approval of the application.
Thank you, Michael. Before, can I get disclosures from anybody? Mike?
I spoke to Mr. Marrero. That would be it.
As did I.
Did you? I didn't hear you.
As did I.
Okay.
I met with Mickey at my office to discuss the project.
I received a few emails but didn't reply.
Same.
No disclosure.
Received a few emails from Mickey but didn't reply.
No disclosures.
Okay. Mickey.
Good afternoon.
Michael, can I interrupt real quick? Does this address this staff recommendation? Does this address the email that we received earlier today regarding a sidewalk? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Was that the one from the Transportation Department?
No. It came from a resident named Matthew and I could pull it up if
I don't think I received that email or didn't get
it. You didn't
time.
Receive it either?
It
came from
the city, I think.
Yeah, it came from the city.
Came from Victor.
Yeah. Came from Victor, yeah. I wonder if it's the same issue.
Here. I'm going to show it to you, Michael.
Just go down. Here's the But I don't think that requires a disclosure, right? I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
That's came from Victor Nunez, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so that's consistent with our recommendation regarding the sidewalk. The bicycle racks, that's something we should look at.
Okay, yeah, those were the two items, and I thought there looked like there was a similarity there. Okay, thank you.
Mickey.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Mickey Marrero from the law firm Burke Howard L. Fernandez and Larkin at 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, here on behalf of the Sterling Building. Not all of you were here, but most of you were here this summer when we briefly spoke about the project in terms of the ordinance, which was recommended by you all and ultimately adopted by the commission in October. As Michael said, that ordinance incentivized, and there's been a lot of media and the hoopla about this. The ordinance incentivized hotel development on Lincoln Road, and in doing so, provided for public benefit space. In the process of discussing the ordinance with stakeholders, we met with MDPL, we met with the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association, we met with the Lincoln Road bid, and through those discussions and our discussions with staff, we ultimately got to the restrictions in the ordinance on being set back from Lincoln Road a certain amount of feet so that the additions are not entirely visible, and we got to the public benefit space and the public benefit contribution. Those were all part of the process that this ordinance had. So we have agreed to comply with all those requirements in order to take advantage of the ordinance. I'm remiss with me today, Kobe Karp, our project architect, and Adrian Dubkowski from Kimley Horn. So the project is a 144-room hotel. It is 75 feet as allowed by the ordinance, and it's set back from Lincoln Road 75 feet. The reason is that allows, it seems like the stakeholders and in those discussions that we had would have preferred the building to have a little more height but be set back so that the massing is not on Lincoln Road and is set back from a visibility standpoint. The 75 feet is consistent with the taller buildings on the just north of Lincoln Road, which are those garages. That's why the ordinance contemplated a smaller height on the south side. So that height is consistent with the buildings that are near it. The hotel is going to continue the existing development on the ground floor, which is a retail development. In some of those meetings, and actually part of my discussion with Nancy at the very beginning of the ordinance, we agreed to keep that courtyard element because the building has always been a gathering space. We talked about the women's club as being a really prominent location for residents on the beach. So we agreed to, and with Kobe's help, kept that courtyard as a place of a gathering place and a place where we expect people to be. Right now, the Books and Books restaurant, their space is there, and Books and Books, by the way, will remain. And even though it's not the public benefit space, it is a cultural space that we're anxious to keep, and they're happy to stay in this building through the renovation and afterward. So as to staff's conditions, we've spoken with our client and with our architect, and we're okay with both conditions. We're going to move the public benefit space to a more prominent location, right sort of at the front of that courtyard area. So that's something that we can do and agree with staff. And also we're going to work to expand that sidewalk on Lincoln Lane. I think you all want to see that as well. And that's consistent. Although I didn't see that email, Mr. Barano, that's something that we've already agreed with staff to do. As far as our traffic, Mr. Dubkowski is here to answer your questions. But we're in agreement, and our staff is here. The traffic study was reviewed extensively, and we have no longer any issues on traffic. We agree with staff on all their conditions as to loading, as to outdoor entertainment. We're not having outdoor entertainment. So really, we're here before you because it's 50,000 square feet or more. We have already applied to the Historic Preservation Board and are scheduled to be before them in January. So this is obviously the first project you're seeing that takes advantage of that new ordinance for Lincoln Road. We were obviously the ones that came to Tom for the first time to propose that ordinance and are very excited to finally bring this project before you. With that, Kobe's here, Adrian's here to answer any of your questions. And, I'll close now, and we'll reserve time for rebuttal if necessary.
I have some questions. Mickey, it's my understanding that the FAR was taken from the Victoria's Secret for this building, and at the corner of on the east side, the new structure is plainly visible from Lincoln Road. Is that true?
Yes, that is true.
Okay. As you know, as the members of this board know, that I was probably the only one who voted against the increase in the height element behind Lincoln Road. My feeling is that the Sterling Building is an iconic structure, and I don't believe that the project, as it's currently configured, does it justice. I think the design, with all apologies to you, Kobe, and I know you're a very talented architect, but I don't think this is your best work. So I know it's coming before the Historic Preservation Board next January, And I hope that they insist on very stringent revisions on this design. I know our hands are tied because of the ordinance, but I can't support this project.
David, you feel it's inconsistent with the rest of the building, the design? Is that your concern?
Yes, it's inconsistent with the Sterling Building, which has been a unique icon on Lincoln Road since long before I was born 100 years ago. So I strongly object to this project. I can't support it. I don't think it should be done. I think there should be some other creative way to utilize this space or improve the design, not simply gather all the FAR from the back and from the Victoria's Secret part of the building and then just put a structure up that doesn't even resemble the building. So I'm opposed to the project on several different
All right, well, let's let him do the presentation and then...
Well, maybe he asked me if he did do the presentation. He asked me if there were questions, so...
Maybe I can ask him...
No, I'm saying, I was going to say let Kobe present and then we can... But go ahead.
Maybe I can ask Kobe as a way to present the project. Could you walk us through exactly what's being demoed, what's being added onto, where you're locating things, and also maybe the variances that you're seeking?
Sure. So, Kobe Carr, for the record, 2915 Biscayne Boulevard. And as David mentioned, and if I just turn you to page 5.10 and 5.11, these are images that we created from the public right away from the street. 5.10 shows the addition that was approved on the building on the corner on Michigan. And then 5.09 shows being on the corner further away.
Sorry, did you say 5?
Give us 1 second.
Yeah.
I'm not what following. Page is it?
5 it's in after your package.
4.14. It isn't numbered.
Oh, the images after 4.14, I don't think they're numbered, but I think that's where they are.
Yeah. And okay. Let me go up here and show you. What we basically did is we met with neighbors and we met with MDPL, and the feeling was how it is that we implement a building, and the idea was, and in your package it shows it, and here's another image actually from the corner that I was referring you to. We met with staff, and we feel that a 75-foot structure would be seen if you step far enough from it. Yet at the same time, taking the FAR from the adjacent property, what it does is it allows us to take the FAR in place of what we think is the most logical location. And the most logical location, we felt, was closer towards the existing garage. There is a garage which is located immediately to the north of the alley, and this is the garage right here. And what we looked at, and this is the Victoria's Secret building that David was referring to. So meeting with everybody, we felt that it's most proper to take the available FAR and place it furthest away from the right-of-way of Lincoln Road, and at the same time create, this is a view sight line angle, and it's kind of the materials that we submitted for the Historic Preservation Board that shows how it is set back and how it relates to the existing building. And the notion here is to create a building which really comes up and gets serviced by Lincoln Lane. What we have done is created an opportunity to maintain the paseo. We have a beautiful terrazzo paseo. I'm sure everybody has seen it. This is 925 Lincoln Road right here. And Books and Books goes right in the back. So the idea is to create a pedestrian path that goes from Lincoln Road Mall through to Lincoln Lane, and as staff has mentioned, and we're in agreement, to continue the pedestrian circulation not only to the east, which it exists, but also potentially onto the west. Because what happens is that, and that's why my answer to David right away was yes. It's yes because the building will be seen as the garage is being seen from certain angles from the public right away. But we feel that there is an opportunity here on this specific site to take the available square footage and place it in the furthest point away from Lincoln Road and be accessible from Lincoln Lane and activate Lincoln Lane. And that's how we came to that solution. Actually, this building specifically, Sterling Building, When I first arrived in Miami Beach in 1988, our offices were right here at 925 Lincoln Road in a little store called Ganela. And that's where my first office was back in Miami Vice and Scarface days. So I'm familiar with the building. And I think that the preservation and restoration of the path and continue it through to Lincoln Lane creates a pedestrian movement, which is quite nice and unique. The short answer is yes, the building will be visible. And as we represent to you from aerials and from distances, and that's what we showed MDPL, and that's also what we showed the neighbors, Lincoln Road Association, is we will be visible. But it is set what we think is in the most proper location with the least amount of demolition. So specific on the demolition, which you can see, is we are coming on the backside of where the addition. So historically, there was Ahmed Revival building right here, which is where Books and Books is, and then the Sterling was built on Lincoln Road in this beautiful streamlined facade that we're all familiar with, and you penetrate it in the middle through the terrazzo floors. We continue that pattern right on through to Lincoln Lane. And so our addition is part of the composition of additions that have historically been done on this site. Historically, there was a single-story Mediterranean building right here. Then came along the Sterling building as we know it. And then we are proposing the addition on the back. This is a view that is visible from Lincoln Road. This is a view of the Plaza Piazza that we are referring through that goes from Lincoln Road to Lincoln Lane. This is the Books and Books on the right-hand side. And then...
Kobe, do you have any pictures of how you're activating Lincoln Lane? You mentioned and what that's going to look like.
Yes, we have an image. Forgive me. So what happens here, and so this is the garage as it exists, is right here on the left-hand side. And this is the retail that David is referring to, Victoria's Secret, that continues on to the east. This is our entry to the hotel. And we specifically met with and were requested, you know, because we looked at this building being stucco, being white. And some folks have actually mentioned that it should stay the concrete gray to make it stand out from the streamlined stucco building, because the Sterling has the glass wraparound curved facade. Then it has, on top of it, it has a beautiful wave pattern in the stucco. And then above that, there's the glass block with the stainless steel reveal, and then starts the glazing. So we are going to what we thought was a more contemporary geometry that works off of the DNA of the original Sterling and create the new building in the back. So meeting with the staff and with MDPL and the neighbors, we felt that this was a step in the right direction.
So activation means the hotel entrance. It doesn't infer any other uses on Lincoln Lane.
Correct, Michael. The intent of this is to add guest rooms, but use the food and beverage and the facilities of Lincoln Road and the Sterling Building and the surrounding neighborhood. That's really our intent here.
Kobe, let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
The streamlined modern design of the Sterling Building is completely different from what's here. Now, I know good architecture should be of its time, but this addition is such a huge departure from the concept of the Sterling Building. I don't really see much carryover or joining of an attempt to join the or meld the architecture of the hotel with the existing Sterling Building.
Right.
That troubles me.
I appreciate David, and you know that was part of the discussion before I started to design the building, and I spoke to certain folks in the community, and they wanted me to, and they felt it a departure, if you will, from the streamlined building, because there's a composition of buildings. There is the original Mediterranean single story, which is essentially in the courtyard right here to the right-hand side. And we felt that this is a glorious facade, which is very special. And we felt that the addition should be substantially different from it, but it should also be, it should be a step away from that glorious facade. So this is the main event facade of the hotel, and the guest room's blocks, if you will, are very much in the geometry of the building. The geometry of the building specifically has, if you look closely, has these squares with harlequin tile patterns and very strong fluting. And so we picked that up on the geometry of our modern structure. And it has very large glazing inset in here. And then it has the band of glass, which is the glass block. We felt that the celebration of the Sterling is much more proper if we, which it is really, it's the front door of this hotel. And whereby really the alley event, if you will, the Lincoln Lane event, which is garbage and it's a backyard of the garage, right? I mean, the planters of the garage are facing the other ways. And so we felt that this is the kind of industrial image and look and that we should relate more to the garage facade. And that's where it came from, David, and I appreciate your comments. And we got there through...
So you intended to depart from the Sterling...
Yes, sir.
That was your intention.
Yeah, that is the intention, because we felt that if we were to a crown, you know, floating on top, we just mimic it. And even if it's modern and it's glass and stainless steel, it's still too close. Mm-hmm. And you can see that the Sterling building itself departed architecturally from the Med Revival building that is inset there where the books and books are, which we're preserving and bringing back.
Additions are always very troubling, and I didn't mean to be too harsh at the
beginning.
No,
David, please.
Additions are a very troubling architectural enterprise.
Yes.
Because you're looking at, and you can see examples of that throughout the world, where there are radical departures from the underlying architectural structure and the newer building, and I appreciate your effort there, and I imagine when this gets in front of the Historic Preservation Board, you're going to be hearing from them on the design issues. There's just something about the design that troubles me a little bit.
And again, I think you've hit it. You know, I mean, Carlos Scarpa comes in with just clear glass crystalline buildings, or even if you look at the classical buildings in London, all the architecture that is connected to it is drastically contemporary to say, here we stop and here we start. And I think what's nice about this, and I think it's a process. You know, in the beginning I had the building as stucco with white, and folks asked me, you know, you should really study it, maintaining. I had an image with the concrete. They said you should really respect the concrete and look into it and in the relationship to the garage. And you know me, David, I listen to everybody, and for me it's a charrette and design is dynamic, so I'll be more than happy to that. Thank you.
And if I may just add a couple things on what's been discussed that I think kind of Kobe alluded to, but I want to clarify. The project itself, it's not just the addition, but it includes the complete restoration of the contributing building. You know, it's going to make it flare again. It's going to make it, you know, feel... Yeah, fully restored, which is exciting. And as to the activation, Michael, we're not going to have additional retail bays on Lincoln Lane, but right now it's back of house. It's the back of the building. It's where the dumpster.
Yeah, it certainly
is.
Will be nicer than the way it is now, right? I was trying to understand what that word, how that word was being defined. So.
But it will have the sidewalk, you know, which is further expanded with staff's condition. It's going to have our valet drop-off, and the hotel itself is a public interior that will lead into that wonderful courtyard, which will have the public benefits base, books, and it's really, I think, organically going to connect Lincoln Road to the lane and be a true activation that hasn't really been successful up to this point.
Can you walk us, what are the variances you're seeking for the project?
There's a variance on the, you can say more detail, just read them out. There's a side interior setback, a rear setback on the Lincoln Lane side.
Well, what is it, what's the requirement, and what are you proposing? Who grants that variance?
The Historic Preservation HPB? Board. It's not before you, but we've applied for those. And I think it's 5 feet in the rear, right?
Correct. 5 feet in the rear, because we were also trying to make the building as skinny as possible and push it as far back as possible.
And the interior side setback, that's not a zero setback?
Yeah, the interior side is 20 feet, and we are proposing a zero.
Because that's what's existing.
Yes, sir.
We're expanding it slightly.
Yes, sir. And those are the two that we are requesting. It's on page A0.01.
How did these buildings end up this way if they were 20-foot interior side setbacks, or when did those setbacks?
The setbacks were probably adopted after
actually,
we built.
I'm sorry to interrupt,
why are
Mickey,
these not zero?
No, it's part of our cleanup ordinance for variances. You no longer need the side setback, only the rear setback.
Okay.
There you go.
You don't need that.
Correct.
So by the time we get to HPB, it's no. We did apply for it, I think, as an abundance of caution.
Kobe, did you do any additional designs or alternative designs prior to submitting this one?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
It'd be interesting to
see. I'd love to set a meeting with you, David. I'll come over. Absolutely. Would love to.
So, Kobe, I have a couple of questions for you. So,
yes, Daniel.
I like the interaction with Lincoln Lane. I think Lincoln Lane's reinventing itself from a planning perspective. I'm really concerned about Lincoln Lane and how we treat it, make sure it's functional. So I agree with staff on the addition of the sidewalk.
You had to have the sidewalk there.
Yeah. And I think you're doing it. And I think it's nice that you're inviting the entrance to the hotel to be from Lincoln Lane, or you can access it through Lincoln Road. And I like that.
Yes.
What I want to make sure is that as we're inviting the pedestrians to circulate around the block, that we're thinking about Lincoln Lane and what it is today. It's an alley in back of the house, and there's a lot of vehicular activity going down Lincoln Lane. We're going to invite pedestrian activity. So I'm concerned about leading the pedestrian westward, and where do they go? We're throwing them back into the alley. So do you think it's appropriate at the western boundary of your property line where your sidewalk ends and can't continue to Michigan that we do a crosswalk that leads a pedestrian across the street to be on the crosswalk on the other side bordering the parking garage? That would be one question, because I do want the pedestrian circulation to be successful. I realize they're just going to walk wherever they want to walk, and they'll probably just be down the alley anyhow, but I think we need to start planning Lincoln Lane as a real street and not treat it like a back of the house. And staff was telling me that your unified site does not include the building to the west. So that building is under construction, and perhaps staff will be successful at getting them to install a sidewalk, so that continuous sidewalk on the northern side of the building, you know, bordering Lincoln Lane would be complete. The other concern I have is with the vehicular drop-off, just to put a condition to make sure that we don't have any cars queuing up Lincoln Lane and blocking Lincoln Lane. So these are challenges with trying to reinvent Lincoln Lane, and I like the drop-off because that's functional for a hotel, but I want to put a condition that just doesn't allow cars to back up.
And Daniel, I just realized we do have a condition, page 51 or page 4 or 5 of the draft order. It talks about the operational plan and to be submitted to the city regarding the queuing to substantiate that there's no queuing within that drop-off area.
What number is that, Michael?
It's page 51. 9D.
Got it.
D. As in David.
And then we will have the standard progress report when the project is completed for the applicant to come back to the board and present an updated traffic circulation plan.
And I just spoke to Adrian, and he can answer your questions as well, but we agree with you. And, you know, he's confident that we'll be able to be successful in that regard as well.
Perfect. Thank you. The rooftop doesn't have any public use. No outdoor bar counter. It's not for public, only for guests.
There'll be a restaurant, but it's not going to be entertainment. There'll be no bar.
But there won't be a restaurant on the rooftop.
No, this is for the guests of the hotel. The intent, you can look on the plans, it's just there's a juice bar, and that's about it. If, for example, people want to bring food from the restaurants below, they can certainly do that.
Yeah, I agree, room service or from the restaurants below. I'm just curious if the rooftop will be open to the public.
Right now it is not. No, it's not.
This is a swimming pool on the roof, right?
Yeah, we have a pool for the guests of the hotel.
We can ask more questions. Let me ask, is there anyone from the public here on this item? No? Okay. Close the public hearing.
And before the board deliberates, do any board members have any ex parte communications?
They did it already.
You already did. Sorry.
No problem. Any other questions?
Self-reporting, Nick.
I'm happy with it.
Listen, we can agree to disagree. I like this project a lot. I think Kobe did a beautiful job. It would look silly if you tried to replicate the Sterling building on top of the Sterling building. Just
just
with no,
were you persuaded by that argument, David? Or were you persuaded by that?
By the way, it's not for us
one,
either.
One
David.
At a time,
it's,
guys.
It's not for us either because we're
no, I'm not applying
to,
that.
To
I'm not trying to redesign.
One at a time. One at a time.
I'm not trying to redesign Kobe's building. I'm not an architect.
And
let me just finish. Kobe's a very fine architect. He's done
That's
a lot
debatable.
Of good work throughout the town. I just don't care for this design because. To me, it looks like the Holiday Inn that's on Collins Avenue in 63rd Street.
Killing Kobe. Holiday Inn.
Is that what you were going for?
Look, I've known David and I've presented David many years.
I'm going to start calling you Holiday Inn
like
Kobe.
What I do. But
it's your new nickname, Holiday.
I like that, Holiday.
So no matter what the design is, Kobe's got an uphill battle with me because I did not support any additions to this building or any height restrictions, increase on Lincoln Road. So right. I'm constrained to not, you know.
I get it. I appreciate your comments. I'm sure they do too.
So I just want to ask a couple of things. The property to the west right now, right, is not owned by all, but the Lincoln Lane
right.
is controlled by, who controls Lincoln Lane?
Well, the right-of-way is controlled by the city, but
right.
there is a certain
right.
portion
no, that so What's preventing us from asking them to continue the sidewalk all the way both side streets all the way through, even behind the neighboring property, if we control?
I think the problem is the width of the alley there is not wide enough because you have the sidewalk to the north. I don't think there's enough to have the sidewalk actually constructed within the right-of-way.
I think we have to do something. I walk back there too, and it's going to be a zoo back there when you have cars and people walking at the same time with no real delineation between where people should be walking and where people should be driving. It's just going to be free-for-all
back
there.
And also, just as part of this whole redevelopment, they will be redoing the entire alley, including finished materials,
yes.
probably not asphalt, probably some sort of different paving materials, getting rid of the overhead power lines. So that'll be all part of the – which is required, and they're required to do that for the entire length,
right.
not just adjacent to their parcel.
So I don't know what the status is on the project to the west, but can we at this point require this developer to finish the sidewalk to that street to the west of them? Well, you're saying you can't do that right
now. Well, I think it may restrict the width of the alley, but I think what they could do at this point, extend the sidewalk all the way to the west and then return back to the north with a crosswalk in that location until such time that the property to the west can construct a sidewalk behind their parcel.
Yeah, I just see a lot of problems there, Mickey, because I go back there and it's just so much stuff going back there. I avoid that area because of the traffic there.
So what I can tell you is, you know, Adrian just came up to me. It's 17 feet right now. So theoretically, you could put a 5-foot sidewalk and still have 12 feet for a car. I'm saying it's theoretically possible. I don't know that Public Works would necessarily approve that. So I don't want to restrict this project, but I can tell you that from our client's standpoint and from Kobe's standpoint, there is a desire to reach that goal. So ultimately, there's some.
It'll be better for your project,
Mickey.
It'll be more pedestrian friendly back there. I think you're going to get a lot coming from Lincoln Road, but you're also going to be feeding in from both side streets.
I'd like to answer Michael's question as to whether I was persuaded by Kobe's explanation. Kobe's very persuasive. So I understand the philosophy behind the design differing from the Sterling building, and I was in no way advocating that the Sterling building should be extended in its design to the new project. And I know this is going to pass the board, but I'm going to vote against it for that reason, and I hope that the Historic Preservation Board will help Kobe or talk to Kobe about refining this design. And so that's my, that's my take on it. I think Kobe's capable of a much better design.
And just to answer what Daniel and what Michael was talking to Mark, we are very amenable to put in, and I think we will work with Public Works, and they will give us a 12-foot wide lane and then a 5-foot walk, pedestrian defined. It's good for us, it's good for the hotel, it's good for the neighborhood, and it's good for the connectivity of Lincoln Lane back to Lincoln Road.
And just one other thing, Mickey. I know that there's talking about moving the public benefit space. Is there an agreement on that right now, or is this just going to be an issue?
No, we agree with that.
Because perhaps we should put on the record what that exactly is, as opposed to have some sort of negotiations about it later on.
So Michael. Staff's condition, actually, there's a drawing in the staff report to flip it to where they want it, and we agreed with that location. So I think, you know, when we go to HPB, we'll have it. We'll have a drawing for them showing the new location.
Michael, any comment on that?
No, we agree. We suggested a location or other alternative location, which is highly visible, subject to HPB.
And the location that they suggested, we're in agreement with.
When are you going to HPB this month?
It's January.
January, okay. Yep. And then is there anything left for planning at that point, planning board?
No, that's it.
Okay. All right.
So one other thing. I just want to say that this building deserves something extremely creative. It really deserves something extremely creative, and not something that's just going to be stuck on top. And so that's my feeling and my heartfelt. I know there's going to be a building there. I know it's going to be done, finished and completed. But I'd love to see something really extraordinary for this that matches the Sterling Building, because it's probably the most beautiful building on Lincoln.
David, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I've met with individuals. I have not met with you on that. If you give me an opportunity, I'd love to sit down with you and get your thoughts.
It's an interesting conundrum, because in one sense, you don't even want the addition to be seen, right? That's the sightline diagram.
Right.
On the other hand, if it is seen, you don't want it to compete.
Right? Yeah, it will be seen. I mean, there are buildings that contradict existing architecture all over the world, the Louvre Pyramid, the Picasso Museum, the Guggenheim. You know, all these designs were very, very innovative, and even the Eiffel Tower was innovative at the time. So I know you can do it.
Thank you.
I like the way it's stepped back. So I'm actually prepared to move this forward.
Go ahead. Waiting for
just have one.
So let me just say I'm prepared to move this forward with the modification that where the public benefit space is going to be moved as pursuant to the agreement between the city and the developer, and then that the sidewalk is extended to the entire property line. And with just like one comment, which isn't part of it, to work with the property in the west to perhaps get it going all the way to the west side of that.
Absolutely. Problem. We've talked to our client about that, so there's motivation on our side. Hopefully something works out.
Well, listen, I don't under, I had asked a question that you had asked. I was asking staff, so I apologize that I didn't verbalize it. I'm in agreement. Why can't we? It's not going to be 12. First of all, it's 13, because 20 minus 7 is 13. So why? I think you should do it, you know. And on the east side, you don't have a curb and gutter, so you just have a 5-foot sidewalk. On the west side, if Public Works allows, you can maybe just do a 5-foot without the 2-foot curb and gutter, then that'd be 15. So if we have the power to do it, I would say that we would recommend that it be included subject to Public Works approval.
And what I would add is also Adrian keeps whispering in my ear. There's a desire on our side to do it. Our only restriction would be the approvals, and I think he's concerned that fire might also be concerned about the width because of fire trucks. So if we can do it, I think we would love to, and also in cooperation with the property owner to the west. We just don't want there to be a condition that we ultimately can't comply with because of fire or Public Works or the property owner to the west.
Right, so we can make it subject to beyond Public Works. We can make it subject to regulatory approval.
Thank you.
And I guess that it works with a neighboring property.
Well, I don't think it's in the right of way. I don't think that they have the ability to tell you what you're going to build in the right of way.
Yep. So,
and what are you going to do with the utilities that's running behind that alleyway? What's your intent? Are you going to underground those utilities?
That's our intent right now. Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Okay. Can you work to underground the utilities throughout that entire block on the rear side? You're only left with a small part. I'm not going to put it as a condition, but clearly there's another pole to the property to the west, so just try to be smart about Lincoln Lane and just get rid of all of the utilities back there while you're at it.
That's our intent, and that's part of why we're seeking to push, you know, the building closer towards the garage and towards Lincoln Lane. And yes, we do want to bury it all along Lincoln Lane from Victoria's Secret through our site and on to the west.
And on to the west. Yeah, yes, I think it'll make it more successful.
Yes. Thank you, Danny.
Okay. So with that, I'll move this for a favorable recommendation.
Second.
To approve it.
Okay.
And that's with the things that we talked
with
about.
With the three provisos, one, you know, the public space, the sidewalk to the east, but also the sidewalk to the west to the extent that it can be done.
Okay.
Okay. I get a second?
Second.
Second from Kareem. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Okay. So David opposed. 6-1.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks have a good holiday.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Mr. Holiday, you have a good holiday.
Thank you, sir. You stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night, Kobe.
I almost made that joke.
I know. I just have a question.
I was saving it.
To staff on this application. Just when we were talking, we mentioned that we're aware of some rooftop elements that are going to show up on the HBB plans that didn't show up on ours. And I think it's important for us to see all the elements as it's going to go to HBB. I know that's not always the case. But just asking questions, we found out they're going to have a juice bar on the rooftop, but my plans aren't showing that intent. And I think from a planning board perspective, it would be beneficial for us to force the applicant to show all attributes and operations of the building, inclusive of whether or not
Mickey.
We want to put conditions on them. I think that would just be beneficial for us.
You get these down? Thanks. Okay, first want to welcome Tom to the meeting, Mr. Mooney. Next and last thing on the agenda is Planning Board File 190332. It's an ordinance regarding floor area clarification. And I just want to make a caution and tell the public, anyone that's here to speak on this item, to make sure your comments are directed to the actual ordinance and not any specific project. With that, Michael? I'm sorry.
I'll be introducing this item, Mr. Chair. As you probably noted in the staff report, it's a fairly simple, straightforward ordinance that's before you. It basically clarifies and reaffirms that three elements of a building are included in the definition of floor area. I did want to give you just a little bit of background and let you know where we're moving forward with regard to not just this ordinance, but another separate referral that pertains to FAR. The definition of floor area has a very lengthy history. It's almost 50 years old. From 1971 to 1989, that particular code actually identified all of the areas that are included in floor area. And that definition under Ordinance 1891 included specifically stairwells and elevator shafts. In 1988 and 1989, the Zoning Ordinance Review Committee, at the time, this was 30 years ago, was reviewing the zoning ordinance comprehensively, and they recommended to the commission that the definition be modified to not specifically list all inclusions, but rather to include everything and only list exclusions. And that's where the current definition of floor area was adopted in 1989. In 1994, that particular definition and the interpretation of that definition was challenged. The planning director at the time, his determination was challenged, and it went to the Board of Adjustment, and the Board of Adjustment at that time, actually on two separate occasions in the 90s, reaffirmed the planning director's interpretation, which was consistent with Zork's recommendation and the plain reading of the ordinance. The City Commission, subsequent to that Board of Adjustment decision in 1994, never amended the definition of floor area with the exception of adding more exclusions, but they never added the three elements, stairwells, elevator shafts, and mechanical chutes, as specific exclusions. So since that time, there were no changes to that. One of the things that's asked by us often is, why are those areas included? And I think that's a very fair question, and it's something that I think has been sort of lost in this discussion. There's three important reasons why those particular areas have been included in the definition of floor area and should continue to be included in the area in the definition of floor area. First, those areas add to the bulk and mass and intensity of a building, and that's what floor area by definition regulates. Regardless of how many elevator shafts, stairwells, or mechanical chutes you have, they do add to the intensity and to the bulk and mass of a building. That's what floor area expressly governs. Secondly, they provide clarity because from a definitional standpoint and a regulatory standpoint, it's very clear what is being reviewed floor to floor, particularly when a plans reviewer is reviewing architectural plans for building permit. And three, for the last 50 years, all buildings constructed during that time period have included those areas within the floor area. It's been very, very consistent. This past November, there was an item that went to the Board of Adjustment on appeal, and the Board of Adjustment reversed essentially the 50 years of zoning precedent, which essentially resulted in an increase in FAR because the Board of Adjustment said that those areas should now be excluded, and therefore they opened up those areas through their exclusion, the resulting area to be counted in floor area. The City Commission, through this referral, is basically reversing the Board of Adjustment decision. This ordinance that's before you that was referred unanimously by the City Commission last Wednesday is reversing the Board of Adjustment decision and reaffirming that these elements count in the FAR. Moving forward, we've always believed that a better option to address questions of FAR would be to have increases in FAR looked at strategically. It shouldn't just be through some decision at the Board of Adjustment that is vast and unstudied. And the there's a proposal. We've spoken to the mayor about this, and the mayor intends to place a referral item on the January 2020 City Commission agenda to the Planning Board that would address the issue of perhaps expanding FAR in a manner consistent with the areas that would be created by removing elevator shafts and stairwells, but in a more strategic way, and by actually, rather than creating new exclusions, providing for bonuses based upon tangible benchmarks. The reason that this is a much better way to go is twofold. One, because this is a legislative prerogative of the City Commission, the Commission would be referring it and would be administering this through legislative act. More importantly, it would give the Planning Department the opportunity to come up with strategic recommendations that are specific to areas of the city that are specific to certain benchmarks. One of the things that we're thinking about are resiliency bonuses. And this would allow for continued clarity in the review of floor area, but would allow for, in certain instances where certain benchmarks are met, modest increases that would result not from expanding exclusions, but by meeting benchmarks. And we believe that the Planning Board would have a lot to say as far as input and as far as that discussion. So we anticipate that that referral will be made in January. That would be coming back to you either at your January or February meeting, and that that would be a much better vehicle for exploring an increase in FAR than the avenue that was taken by the Board of Adjustment. So as the chair said, what's before the board is the ordinance that reaffirms the that the elements in question are counted and are part of the definition of floor area. We're recommending that you send that to the commission, transmit that to the commission with a favorable recommendation. And if you have any questions about the staff report or what I've just discussed, I can certainly answer those. I can certainly answer any questions after public comment as well.
Okay. Unless there's questions of Tom now.
Tom, what you're talking about, is, as I read in the charts, is a net increase of anywhere between 6 and 16%
yes.
of the total FAR in the building if these items are excluded.
Correct.
That's a pretty significant amount of FAR, is it not?
Yes.
Ryan, how would you like to?
I'd like to have public comment.
And then.
Correct.
Conversation with Tom. Okay.
Correct. So open to public comment.
And Mr. Chair, I'll be keeping the time at 3 minutes per speaker unless you tell me otherwise.
No, let's leave it at three.
Okay.
Thank you. And please, whoever speaks, were you here when we were swearing in witnesses?
Yes.
You were. Okay. Identify yourself with your address or your affiliation and then speak.
You got it. Rishi Kapoor, 1234 through 1260 Washington Avenue. Good afternoon, members of the board and city staff. I apologize. I'm going to use some notes as I just want to respect your time and try and get through this efficiently. I understand regarding FAR, the city's and 500 Alton, I'm not speaking to the merits of that. What I do want to speak to is what Mr. Mooney very nicely just discussed as a potential referral to the city commission in evolving the definition of FAR. And I'm giving you a property owner's perspective as we're designing a co-live, co-work, and wellness project by the name of Urban Retreat. And our project is designed to help address the societal problems of affordability, sustainability, and mobility. So first, I want to give you a variety of reasons why it would be beneficial for property owners, our tenants and guests, and the city at large to consider expanding the exemption list of FAR to include mandatory trash chutes, mechanical rooms, elevator shafts, stairwells, and other back-of-house space required in the building, what I call infrastructure FAR. Second, I would love to see that this is a win for the community, and I'm proposing that such exemption space that allows for FAR to increase to be utilized foot by foot as what I'm just proposing as public benefit FAR. So FAR in a city like Miami Beach is extremely precious. Its limitations are one of the variety of contributing factors as to why we have problems of affordability and in some cases a lack of diverse economic communities. It is part of the reason we have thousands of people as essentially a service class commuting in and out of the city every day. And while I wouldn't impute the wisdom of other jurisdictions on the great city of Miami Beach, there are reasons why other great guardian cities like Coral Gables have adopted a progressive exemption list of FAR. And these requirements are related to building infrastructure that has expanded over the decades to accommodate evolving codes, which I fully admit are a good thing for safety and the experience of our tenants and guests within our buildings. But it limits the amount of space that is sellable or leasable, driving up what a property owner might need to charge in order to make a viable business in a desirable location. So from a practical standpoint, we're talking about areas in the building that are cavities, not actual floors, that are counted on every level. These areas account for, in a case like my building, which is a little bit smaller, potentially 10 to 15%, a meaningful amount within a building that could help owners achieve targets by catering to more people, not charging people more. So what I'm proposing is that let's work together on crafting a solution that provides a true win-win-win between our city, its residents, and our property owners. I would love to work with the city on crafting a trade that that is for floor area of building infrastructure, for public benefits infrastructure. And here are a couple of examples of what I mean by that. Housing for artists, housing for entrepreneurs with registered businesses within the city, teachers and other city employee housing, artist creative services and small business workspaces dedicated in office buildings for those demographics. And then also micro units or co-living with some guaranteed rent control that's targeted for workforce housing. I'm not asking you all to consider just more for more sake. I'm asking you all to balance the public policy of safer buildings, adapting to spaces needed to comply with first-class building standards, which is what has happened, to allow for a trade with this infrastructure FAR to public benefit FAR, and that provides for both unique spaces for underserved demographics, and it allows us to create more affordable places for a variety of demographics to live and work within our city. I appreciate your time so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just say something? You know, haven't we sort of considered that in, as part of, you know, when we were looking for workforce housing to have some sort of trading for FAR at some point?
Well, we weren't allowed to do it because of the city charter.
There's been proposals over the years to create either FAR bonuses or strategic increases in FAR specific to workforce and affordable housing. Those increases would require, just like any increase in zoned FAR in the city, would require voter approval. To date, there has not been a proposal put forward, but as part of a larger discussion, that is one of the things that could potentially be considered.
Right. So while those are pretty good suggestions, it's perhaps premature at this point. It's really more during the meetings that may happen that the mayor has suggested later on.
Discussions like the previous discussions would be perfect for this upcoming referral, because right. this is the type of right. Strategic dialogue that we're talking about.
Mr. Chair, Neeson, Kazin, Ackerman, LLP, members of the board, good afternoon. First, I'd like to make a procedural request. As you have with all the other items that have been heard before this board today, you did not impose a time limit on the speakers. In fact, for 1,000 Collins Avenue, there was one speaker who was a neighbor who came back and forth and back and forth and addressed the issue at length. This is the first time the city attorney has not asked for any time limits. And the reason why on the other issues, and the reason why I bring it up is because this is a much more important issue than any issue you've considered.
Go ahead. I'll give you whatever time you need within reason. Within reason.
You didn't limit it, did you?
What a novelty. A lawyer asking for more time.
But, Neeson, he didn't limit it. I didn't
How much time do you need, Neeson?
I didn't hear him limit it.
Nick had asked for a time limit.
So you're noting his comment.
You need a half an hour? You need an hour? How long do you need?
Mr. Chair, how about I keep it in 3-minute increments, and I'll just keep extending them.
Right, and then if it gets
Mr. Chair, yeah, you should cut people off if it gets redundant. But let's have a discussion. Let's not try to forestall discussion. If there's a viable interchange, as is always,
I
your
agree.
Policy,
go ahead. I always do that. Go ahead.
You always do that. So first, I want to take you back to the authority, the powers, and the duty of the planning board, because too often that gets lost in terms of the day-to-day small items that you consider. According to Florida law, the Community Planning Act, you are the local planning agency for the city of Miami Beach. You have authority vested in you not just by the city of Miami Beach, but by the state of Florida as well, to be the planning agency for the city of Miami Beach. That is recognized in the code of the city of Miami Beach under section 18-51, which specifically enumerates the powers of the planning board. And it includes, and I'll just name some of them, one, to acquire, compile, and collate available data, materials, statistics, maps, photographs, reports, studies necessary to obtain an understanding of past conditions and present trends. Two, conduct such public hearings as may be helpful in gathering information and data necessary for the presentation of suitable and appropriate plans, comprehensive and systematic development of the city. Three, make or cause to be made or obtain special studies on the location, condition, adequacy of specific facilities for the city. Four, make appropriate studies of the location and extent of present and anticipated use of land, population, social, and economic resources. Seven, carry out the responsibilities of local planning agency pursuant to the State and Local Government Comprehensive Planning and Land Development Regulations Act. This board has very serious and important responsibilities. You are not here to rubber stamp or pass through legislation that is referred to you. You are the board that is to give the considered thought and research to those items. I mention that to you because that's exactly what you have to do here. And I would refer back and to the 9 years that I was on the planning board, 1981 to 1990. Commissioner Malakoff was on with me most of that time. And I remember what we used to do is when we had an important issue, or we had an issue that affected large constituencies, be they property owners, citizen activists, et cetera, we would have workshops. We would convene the people who were the affected parties. We would ask for studies. We would perform analysis. And after we did that, we would take a thoughtful vote on the issue. So that, first and foremost, is what I'm asking you to do today. Don't take a referral that was just made a few days ago, rush it through, and then wait to have something come back. Use your statutory and code powers to do a proper job thinking about this. Continue this matter. Call, among other things, a workshop of architects, planners, developers, citizens, to have meaningful input and dialogue on the issues. Two, conduct studies that are needed to assess the impact, if any, of what is proposed. And I have to talk for a moment about that as well, because The way that this is discussed by proponents of this fix-it bill, it is the equivalent of the local version of Trump's invasion of the hordes from south of the border. There is no crisis. There is no invasion. There is no threat to the city. We are talking about the following. And in the staff's analysis on page 5, there are a handful, 7 or 8 current projects which are in the pipeline. All totaled, if they add the extra FAR that would be allowed under this interpretation by the Board of Adjustment, it's 86,000 square feet. Now, further on that page, they say there is almost 23 million square feet of floor area available in the city within properties. And I would ask, if I may, the question, is that 23 million that's been built or 23 million that can still be built?
Neeson, let me interrupt you one second, going back to your procedural request. What about the fact that this, the way that FAR, what this ordinance will do, will codify the way FAR has been treated for 40 to 50 years here? In other words, go study this, go study that. But don't you think that's unique in this situation because of what's been going on for the past 40 years?
No, and here's why. A, there is zero urgency to it when you're talking about 87,000 square feet of potential building in a built environment that has tens of millions of square feet. So the emergency is, to use a common word today, is fake. There is no emergency. That's number one. Number two, let's talk about the definition of it. I believe that the planning department is absolutely sincere in their belief of the way that it should be defined and has been consistent in their definition of it. But the definition was changed in 1989. And codes are not written for the cognoscente, the land use lawyers who frequently appear before boards and architects and the planning staff. But codes are written so that anyone coming to town can read it and understand what the law says. And the Board of Adjustment, which under the city's code, is vested with the ultimate authority to interpret provisions of the code if they disagree with the plan, if there's a disagreement with the planning director's interpretation, said that the plain meaning of the code is not as you have been interpreting it. So if they have been interpreting it in a manner that the average person for 40 years would not have reasonably interpreted it. If they've been interpreting it wrong, it's wrong. I say, let the board, and I have a feeling you will see if the court proceeding plays out on the appeal, and I am not a party to that appeal, but I represent other property owners like Ocean Terrace Holdings who could be affected. If the Circuit Court Appellate Division says, you know what? The code says floors. Floors means something you can stand on. Elevator shafts aren't something you can stand on. You've been interpreting it wrong. Then that is the code and that is the law. So what I'm saying is, yes, they in good faith have been interpreting
it. So hold on. So let me stop you. I'm sorry. But in light of that possibility, then this is an emergency for the city. Because otherwise you're putting it in the hands of a judge, correct?
Well,
I'm just asking. I'm playing devil's advocate because you say it's not a rush, it's not an invasion, but otherwise, then the code is going to be determined by a circuit court judge.
Mr. Chair, the code has been determined by the Board of Adjustment
by five citizens, right?
Five citizens
did it.
Who are vested with the authority under the code of the City of Miami Beach, and one of the.
Right, but we're also vested with the power to suggest other alternatives too, right?
Legislatively, you're free to make whatever recommendations you want.
I'm just addressing your question that it's not an emergency for the city, but would you agree that if we don't take action today, a judge will basically determine the code?
The Board of Adjustment has determined the code, and that is the final
say. Right,
but
that's under
the
appeal.
A court may affirm that.
Correct.
Or reverse it.
But it could still be changed legislatively.
It can still be changed legislatively.
That's why I'm saying.
But there's no rush to change it legislatively.
But it is for the city if they don't want a judge to determine their code.
Well, not really, because if you look, Mr. Chair, let's just take a step back and look at what the horror that is trying to be prevented is.
Okay.
Projects in the pipeline, 86,000 square feet of building. the actual built environment in the city, tens of millions of square feet. And by the way, that also includes, if you include, take the planning department's interpretation of FAR as it has been, if you include the amount of number of buildings, tens of millions of square feet, even under the pre-existing interpretation, there are millions, if not, maybe that's what this number is, 22, 23 million square feet more that can be built. Here we're talking about 86,000 feet in the pipeline. And what is, and what's the impact of it? The impact to the city, there's no impact. No increase in density, it doesn't affect density. Minuscule, imperceptible increase to the built environment. But to individual projects that are in the pipeline, it has a major impact. So I think what's happening here is...
It's my understanding that the building can be increased by... FAR could be increased by 16% in many buildings. I don't see how that's insignificant. Any increase in FAR increases density.
No, density is a number of units. This doesn't affect density whatsoever.
Population density.
No, actually, if we did the study and analysis that should be done, you would probably see that the larger units actually are, because many of them are bought by out-of-towners, are actually yielding a lower population. But again,
but Nisa, no, my point, all I'm saying, and again, this is just procedural. I'm not saying it's right or wrong how it was interpreted, but from the city's standpoint, wouldn't you agree that if we don't take action on their recommendation, then they are in the hands of a judge to determine how FAR is interpreted here?
Well, the judge will either affirm or turn down.
Well, that's not true.
Well, maybe not.
That's why the city wants to change it now, because that arguably could take it out of the hands of the judge. Because
yes, it would.
Okay, explain that to me. How would that work?
Because the Board of Adjustments ruling is being appealed by the city.
Okay. Then the appeal would be
that is before an appellate. It's a circuit court judge, but it's being appealed. If the city now changes the code before that judge rules, and it'll render the appeal moot.
Correct.
That's why the city has an interest in changing it the way they've been interpreting it for the last 50 years. Otherwise, a judge could say the Board of Adjustments is correct, and all of a sudden the code is now changed.
But there's another argument.
I'm just trying to address your argument that it's not an emergency for the city.
Mr. Chair, to your point, one of the arguments that has been made in the appellate proceeding is that the city actually doesn't even have authority to appeal the interpretation of the Board of Adjustment, because under the city code, the Board of Adjustment is the final determination of an administrative interpretation. The code says the Board of Adjustment shall have exclusive authority to hear and decide all administrative appeals when it is alleged.
But Nisa, that's also for a judge to decide too. Well, you can let a judge decide things, or you can take it into your own hands.
But you have to address
it yourself, either through a planning board, through the legislative process, because that perhaps is better than letting a judge decide. There may be a standing issue. There may be all those kind of issues. They may exist, right? But if you say let the litigation play through, then we are putting it into a judge's hand, as opposed to taking control of our own.
What we're also doing is not respecting, in my opinion, the city code and the Board of Adjustments rule. It's a little odd that the city has the ability to pick and choose when the Board of Adjustment is vested with the authority of being the final determiner of an interpretation of the zoning code. It's a little odd that the city has the ability then to pick and choose which decisions of the Board of Adjustment.
But are you saying that are you saying the appeal really has no jurisdiction based on the code? Like the judge will throw it out?
It's possible.
Is there a motion to dismiss the appeal pending?
There is.
Let me ask if you know the answer, Nick.
I don't want to comment on pending litigation.
I want to ask you a procedural question. If we were to take action today, hypothetically, and we recommend this that goes to the commission favorably, and then the appellate court were to dismiss the claim as there's no authority to appeal the Board of Adjustments, and I don't know the answer to that, what would happen?
Well, if you transmit the ordinance today with a favorable recommendation, zoning in progress will kick in.
Right.
The ordinance will be before the city commission as early as January.
Right.
the commission can, as a legislative matter, close the sort of loophole that the Board of Adjustment created. So this is an important measure for the city to address the consequences.
Okay, so Deason's argument that there is no authority to appeal the Board of Adjustments, you disagree with that?
Well, what Mr. Kasten would have you believe is that we have no recourse against a rogue decision of our own board.
Okay.
I have a question.
If I may, just as a special counsel.
Just on this issue, if you don't
special
mind.
As special counsel to the city, Jeffrey Bass, 46 Southwest 1st Street, yes, we fundamentally disagree with Mr. Kasten's assertion that the city is without the ability to seek review of a rogue order of the Board of Adjustment.
And that's going to be decided. Either we're going to let a judge decide that, or we're going to deal with it, you know, ourselves.
Right, but the matter on referral before you today represents the City Commission's legislative wish to control its own destiny and decide this issue for itself as it and only it has the authority.
Go ahead. I just want to follow up on that one point. Go ahead.
I do too. It seems to me there's a difference between the terms interpretation and definition. Isn't it the City Commission and the Planning Director's right to define the code? And where it's ambiguous, you're talking about interpretation, because what's before us is to eliminate ambiguity and further define it.
That's a good question, Mr. Gelby. And the city code has a very specific provision. The planning director is the one charged with interpreting the zoning code. If that decision is interpretation is questioned by a third party out of the city, not by the city itself, but by a third party out of the city, they can then take that issue to the Board of Adjustment. The Board of Adjustment then has final authority to make that interpretation. Now, in this instance, and I don't want to get too far into the facts of this specific case, but in this instance, what the Board of Adjustment found was that it wasn't even so much that it was ambiguous, the definition. It had been misinterpreted, because the definition essentially says floor area is the floors, and floors
is ambiguous.
And if there's ambiguity or something undefined as what a floor is, then the code mandates that you go to a dictionary definition. Definition is the floors you can sometimes stand on.
Let me just follow up on that. Say this whole process plays out, the Board of Adjustment decision stands, whatever. Is there anything that prevents the City Commission or the Planning Director from redefining the term?
No,
the
you have the right to.
No. He's just concerned about the timing of it right now. That's really the issue.
But I think the other thing that's happening is this is a real power play for you hockey fans here. Because if the city is wrong and actually did not have the authority, as is alleged in the appellate pleadings, to appeal the Board of Adjustment decision, then an affected class, a small 6 or 7 project affected class, and you in any event legislate now because you want to close that loophole, but the loophole that never existed because the Board of Adjustment was right and could not have been appealed, then the only people who are impacted are the 6 or 7 property owners who have projects in the pipeline who you have slammed the door shut on.
Now, I understand all that, Mnuchin, but is it your position? I just want to make sure I understand procedural. Your position is that the city has no recourse to any decision rendered by the Board of Adjustments?
The city is not a proper party to appeal an interpretation of the code by the Board of Adjustment. And by the way, until maybe a year ago, look at the 30, 40-year history of the Board of Adjustment, I don't think there was ever an appeal taken of an administrative interpretation.
Well, that's different. That doesn't mean they're not allowed to.
Do you know
the answer, Jeff?
We're talking 30, 40 years.
No, I get
that's
that.
That's the way it was always interpreted.
Well, because they may have agreed with the Board of Adjustments. I'm just saying I want to know if there is a jurisdictional prohibition to appealing a Board of Adjustments decision. Jeff, the follow-up question is, if we did send this on and the commission did make this law and then the judge determined there was no right to appeal, what would happen? That would be chaos.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to answer a different question first.
Okay.
And what I'm not going to do here is engage in the appellate study of the present posture of live litigation,
okay,
to which the city is a party. Will not. Mr. Kazin came before you and asked for the opportunity to conduct studies because he's seeking to delay action today. There's no need to delay action today, and there's every opportunity for study because, as Mr. Mooney told you, the mayor has referred the broader question for the definition of FAR to the planning board so that you could have the conversation and the study as the prior speaker so elegantly asked for. So you have that. So what Mr. Kazin is trying to do today is to create a false linkage between two things that need not be linked. One is a very narrow curative ordinance that plows no new ground. It doesn't require any study. Look at it. It does nothing other than reaffirm what has been and should be the status quo. The next referral will be the opportunity to look at and to study and to consider targeted and strategic ways to increase FAR. And should you wish to have study in connection with that, that's why you're here, and Mr. Kazin did a very good job of telling you that you have all the authority in the world to conduct those studies as part of that conversation. But the exigency has been defined by you. It is real. And the City Commission wasted no time in getting this matter before you. I think one thing that everybody could universally agree with is that there is nothing under our constitutional construct of separation of powers that abrogates the Commission's ability to legislate and to define how it wants to define the rules that govern its play here. That's all you have before you today. It's okay. A very narrow and technical issue, and I would ask that you send us on our way back to the commission with a favorable recommendation today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I may just
go ahead.
Briefly respond. And number one, not to repeat myself, but the planning staff's analysis, the exigency of this, is supported by information that is put in the planning staff's analysis. The planning staff's analysis says you've got to act now because there's this parade of horribles. Parade of horribles is the ability to build millions of square feet of additional FAR. What I am saying is by their own numbers here of six or seven projects, 86,000 square feet in the pipeline, there is no threat. Number two, if you look at their numbers, the numbers don't quite add up. They say, this is why more analysis is needed. They say currently there's an estimated 22,979,000 square feet of floor area available in the city within properties containing apartments and commercial buildings. I don't know if that means there's 22 million more that can be built. There's 22 million that has been built. And it says if this were increased by an additional 9.5%, that's the number people are referring to, there would be an estimated 27 million or 4 million 142,000 square feet more. Well, first of all, the math doesn't add up. 9.5% of 22,900,000 is not 4,142,000. It's more like 2 million. Number two, we don't know if they're talking about how many square feet are already built. Is it 22 million? Or is there 22 million more that can be built? Is there 22 million more that can be built under the pre-existing definition, or is there 22 million more that could be built, including the new definition? I'm not trying to make light or fun of this, but this is a serious matter, and it does require some careful thought and deliberation. And before you are stampeded into taking a legislative action based on the existence of no emergency whatsoever, based on what we see before us, I think it's important you take a breath, you let, this has hardly had even any notice. There are probably a handful of property owners affected who aren't even aware of this hearing and redefinition taking place. That you continue it, you create a workshop, you do a proper analysis of the actual impact of this so we can have a reasonable discussion. The final thing I would request, this is a very important item that I think you have to look at because it's alluded to in the analysis as well. And it has been the sort of a dirty secret that has been kept a secret in City Hall for many years. And that is that there actually is an analysis that was done by outside counsel for the city, reported to the city's attorney's office a few years ago, which said that the charter provision, which purports to require any increase in FAR to go to public vote is illegal. That opinion has not seen the light of day. It's illegal because it exceeds the legislative authority the city has, and it also violates the rights of property owners. Property rights are rights. I put that on the table because let's now be transparent about everything since the issue of FAR is in discussion. And let's, when we discuss this at the planning board or at the city commission or in city forums, have a full and honest presentation of the facts so that we are not artificially binding our hands in our decision making. So all I request is that you continue this, you allow those who have an interest to, you invite them all, you have a workshop, you get the proper analysis by the planning staff so we see if this is a problem at all and to what extent, and that's what I request.
Neeson,
thank you.
To your last comment, I've heard that before too. Are you, in your opinion, are you trying to say that the commission doesn't have the ability to give their power to the voters to vote on whether or not FAR should be increased, and that's a power that the commission must keep themselves and not give to voters?
Well,
I've heard that, and I'm just curious
in
brought
essence,
it out.
Yes, because it comes fundamentally from the fact that it's a property right, which is a constitutional right. So it's like the right of free speech. You can't say, we're going to subject your right to speak to a vote of the people. Same with property. It's a property right. You can't subject that right to a vote of the people. And then there's more law with regard to what the cities have the delegated authority to be able to enact as well. And I know this is not really the forum to do that, but since we've sort of ripped
open.
And
this isn't really that particularly relevant to this, what's going on here. I understand. And by the way, I disagree with that, you know, that putting it. I think that our leaders should lead, and if we vote for them, they should lead.
Which is controversial, it's been raised in argument and also by staff.
But I'm not sure whether that has to do with this, you know, this particular issue right now. I don't think it's really material to this issue.
I have a question I'd like to ask, if you don't mind, Tom Mooney and city attorney, and whether the board of approval constitutes zoning in progress, and whether it will discourage equitable estoppel claims from property owners based on the Board of Adjustment overturning the planning director's longstanding ruling.
I'm sorry. Are you asking whether a favorable recommendation on this ordinance would...
Whether it would discourage equitable estoppel claims from property owners?
I can tell you that...
On the Board of Adjustments...
I'm going to respond a little differently. If the board transmits the ordinance to the City Commission with a favorable recommendation.
Zoning in progress.
This zoning in progress applies, and this ordinance is the ordinance that will apply to projects moving forward unless and until the City Commission acts otherwise. But I just want to address just one point Mr. Kasdan raised at the end. Obviously, the legality or constitutionality of a provision of the Charter is way beyond the scope of the discussion today, and I'll remind everyone that we all have a duty and obligation on this dais to uphold the Charter.
And to that point, with regards to the Charter, that's probably what concerns me the most, meaning Board of Adjustment makes a decision. That decision results in additional FAR. And is that the loophole we're talking about, that the requirement for additional FAR that's in the hands of the voters is being circumvented by the Board of Adjustment's interpretation? So if the Board of Adjustment interpretation is upheld by the circuit court and the judge rules, nope, my interpretation is that the BOA was correct, is the city's position then the next level that that's an increase in FAR based on our charter, willingly or not, and that's going to require a referendum before we allow that FAR to be implemented? Or basically, once the judge rules on that, that additional FAR is just given to developers without having to go through the city charter process?
The question you're asking is a good question. It's a complex and hypothetical question. What I can tell you is that, and this is consistent with the position that we took before the Board of Adjustment, a reversal of the planning director's interpretation, which is what the board did, results in an increase in zoned FAR above that, which was allowed prior to the date of that.
And you're ready to defend that. You're ready to continue to defend that as an increase in FAR, and you're not going to allow it without a city charter referendum.
The position we've taken on appeal is that the charter requires the approval of the voters prior to any increase in zone floor area ratio.
No sense. So this isn't going to end soon. If the judge rules, you're going to continue to fight this. If the judge rules in favor of the Board of Adjustment ruling, you're going to continue to
fight this.
Again,
I really don't want to get into the weeds on the litigation. Right. We have litigation pending.
Mr. Chairman, good morning. Good afternoon. So far you've been talking legal jargon. The legal jargon has been, can the city? But I really want to address, should the city? And what is standing in front of us? What are the ramifications? I apologize for not being as eloquent as the previous speakers. I don't come here represented. And my experience in the last couple of years coming through this board was always getting a fair shake. And to be able to intelligently have a discussion about what things are going to mean. The planning director would have you and the attorney representing, I'm not sure if it's the city or if it's the planning department, that it's very simple. Let's just, you know, the way it was great, let's keep it going. But I can tell you, as it's unfortunate the applicant that appealed the Board of Adjustments isn't here, but I did follow that carefully, and I did read the legal documents, and I'm frustrated because the current city's tactic actually shatters the confidence in local process, because what it's actually doing is saying, we create a board, we're going to give it authority, but if it doesn't meet the administration interpretation, then we're going to go to court and fight it. The city's attorneys are claiming that the board, and I quote, is in clear departure of its limited authority when it reversed the findings. Why has the city been steering every potential developer and property owner that has come into conflict with the issue of FAR for years to the Board of Adjustment to appeal? And why has the city attorney approved that hearing if, in fact, they felt that it was a reach for them to rule on it? The fact that city administration doesn't like the ruling and is willing to spend unlimited funds, actually our money, to force their desired result is the worst type of government possible. What purpose are our boards if they're not respected, if they're not heeded, unless they've been exclusively established to restrict? Now, we've had that experience before. We've had that experience when it was regarding the historic preservation designation. We've all sat here, and which the commission did not accept your recommendation. We had it with the conservation district. The commission did not accept your recommendation. We had it with the density regarding town center. The commission did not accept your recommendations. To claim that the Board of Adjustment overstepped their authority when this city has been relying on that same board's interpretation is ludicrous and undermines the very premise of having a professional resident board. You guys take on the responsibility, are accountable, and have the responsibility to take it seriously, and then when you rule on something, it's going to be ignored. The urgency and the fear-mongering that the sky is falling tactic raises suspicion as to the true motivation and the rush that causes the city to abandon their own notice requirements. Only this morning was the staff report uploaded to the city system. At 8:30 this morning did I see it for the first time. The claim that the city wants a robust public debate while enacting zoning in progress is the further example of how the city negotiates, and it's called hostage diplomacy. We'll keep it ourselves, not open the free market, and now negotiate how to get it back. That is not the way we should be behaving ourselves.
Let me interrupt you, Matisse, because I'm going to tell you my problem.
Okay.
you keep saying they should rely on the Board of Adjustments, but the way I look at it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is the city and staff planning, they, in their minds, feel that FAR should clearly include these items, elevator staff, whatever. So what was before the board was an interpretation of the code, okay? An interpretation based on semantics, I assume. And they disagreed with the interpretation. But if the city wants the definition of FAR to be what it is, I don't look at them as disregarding the board's decision because it was an interpretation. They want to say, listen, they may interpret it the way we want, but this is the way the city believes FAR should be calculated, and therefore they should have the right to clarify the code.
Right, and I'm going to get
so,
to that.
So, again, I don't think they're really disregarding the board's decision because that was an interpretation versus what they believe FAR should be in the city.
Well, I think...
You understand?
Yes, I understand. Okay. I have a problem with it on two levels. The first level is that I have been in front of this board and in front of staff on many occasions. I've done tremendous analysis when it came to the Conservation District, if you remember, regarding how the counting the staircases in small projects are actually deemed them impossible. And we showed 45 plans that were approved that never got built. In fact, I showed you, I did a mock-up study of a property of mine to show you. And I was instructed, hey, there's nothing you can do with it. Go to the Board of Adjustment. So finally, somebody that was large enough in this city that had the wherewithal went to the Board of Adjustment, and he filed the appeal. And the Board of Adjustment, your colleagues, sat and deliberated.
No, but again, that was on an interpretation.
Right, on the interpretation of what that FAR should
be. Not what the city thinks it should be.
Now, the city thinks it should be. If, in fact, that's the case, we should have a robust discussion without zoning in progress. If, in fact, we start tabula rasa, okay, what should FAR include in this city? We should have that debate.
Let me stop you a second. Let me ask Tom one question. You talk about how the next referral will be about a discussion of FAR, but if you engage in zoning and process, then how do you reconcile those two things where you're doing zoning and process and then you're going to have a discussion about the issue?
Zoning in progress basically just does nothing more than restore the status quo.
Okay.
So this FAR referral that's coming down the pike, this could have been done even if the Board of Adjustment had never made their decision in November. So
what you're saying then, it maintains the status quo, and then the next discussion could be to then further amend
exactly
the code? Okay,
yes. Got it.
Okay, so what happens essentially is the city is saying that we're going to go back, forget about the Board of Adjustment hearing, we're going to say we're going to enact new legislation that's going to include, maybe unjustly or justly, that's a debate that we haven't had. Because we haven't had a debate here regarding why FAR should be included, those things or not. We've had those discussions before, and we all sat here wondering and looked at staff and said, but that's an FAR issue. That's not up to us.
Matisse, I'd just like to say something.
Okay.
By the way, I failed to disclose that Mr. Galbit called me yesterday.
Yeah, I don't think you have to make disclosures on a code amendment. But,
all right, but
thanks.
I have to make a disclosure okay. That he called me yesterday. And what I see here, not as only as a lawyer but as a citizen, is that developers want more FAR. The city wants to keep a lid on the FAR. And the advocacy of Mr. Kasdan, which was very, very convincing. I remember trying many jury cases, and the first thing what you do is you empower the jury, and so Mr. Kasdan spent 15 minutes telling us how much power we have. So I think that the city has the ability to control FAR.
Yes.
And I don't think these Board of Adjustment decision affects that power. And I think that, quite simply, it's within the purview of this board to recommend to the commission that this loophole be closed.
Why do you call it a loophole?
Well, there's a loophole in the regulation because of the Board of Adjustment creating one.
Well, the Board of Justice interpreted it. You're referring it to a loophole.
As the chairman said, this is a matter of interpretation. So it's incumbent on this board to determine whether it's going to decide whether the city is going to maintain the FAR, which has existed for a long period of time. I see it quite simply, and I also see that the demand or the request for studies is simply a delaying tactic to defer the decision of the board. So I think we should go along with what the appropriate thing would be to do is to make our close the public discussion if there isn't.
No, there's more people here to speak.
I'd like to finish if you didn't jump in for a second.
Okay. Go ahead and finish.
So regarding precedent, and if that is the basis in which we are deciding whether it's appropriate or not, this FAR interpretation, 50 years ago, Jews and blacks needed a permit to get into the city. The FAR in town center was 6.5, and the unit count was 390 per acre.
That's like Doug Collins arguing that there was no...
Private homes were allowed 70% lot coverage only 3 years ago. Setbacks are on the agenda every year to be increased. So which precedent do we feel is really important to stick to in this city? Over the years, the city has systematically restricted and downzoned development, resulting in our cities becoming the inequality capital in housing in the country. With every increase in setback, minimizing in lot coverage, height reduction, comprehensive amendment, and more recently, floor plate restriction. This is a new one that just came in. Floor plate restriction, every square foot of sellable and rentable space has become exponentially more expensive. This has resulted in a lose-lose for the city and its residents and our neighbors, and for the people that might want to live here that can no longer afford it. The state regulates staircases, elevators, and load capacity. Those requirements consistently change and further protect us, which I agree with. The second the city decided to regulate floor plate, the proverbial feces hit the fan, because all of a sudden you have a limited space where you have to fit in those required elements, and these are the elements that are being discussed. The city has another claim right out of the NIMBY playbook. The city infrastructure can't handle this extra additional FAR. We've heard that many times in this forum. That's simply another misnomer. Every new development pays concurrency, what's now called mobility, impact fees, to pay for and subsidize the existing infrastructure for everybody else in the city. As much as the city would like to conflate the massing, intensity, density, and FAR into one, the comprehensive plan regulates every single zone in the city, telling you what your density can be. And if this stays the same, the status quo, which is this overruling, then the benefit to everybody will be very simply that you might have an extra room in your house, that the amenity space in your building might be a little better. And God knows that over 3 years ago, I was here making claims, warning about the historic preservation and conservation, that you have no room to set off the cost of resiliency, and that without creating true incentives for those areas, you will not be able to overcome the problems of historic preservation. Lo and behold, last week, Alan Schulman presented the first guidelines to the Historic Preservation Board. With $1 million cost to a Rambler, which is a 4 to 6 unit building, the only suggestion he came up with was additional FAR. And now you have the opportunity to allow people to have a little breathing room, to have a little one more room in their unit. We keep on complaining about micro units.
Are you going to wrap it up, Matisse? You said the same thing.
So I just say one thing, is that sometimes doing nothing and not rushing is the right thing to do. And here, in this situation, is don't be scared to push on an agenda to take control again of an FAR that is so valuable to everybody, not only me, but to all of you, and to allow it be. Let it be. Thank you.
Thank you. Sandor?
Thank you. Look, I think that...
Just introduce yourself for the record.
Sandor Scher, Ocean Terrace Holdings. I think that with all of the different viewpoints that are before this board today, it should be obvious that this is a very weighty matter that you need to take the time to consider, and that the way this has been handled by the city to push this legislation in front of this board is the proper way to do it. I'm not here to debate whether or not the commission has the ability to legislate. I'm not here to debate whether or not that legislation should come in front of the planning board. Those are all things that are would be very difficult to make a point with. What I'm here to make the point on is that this is a very involved and very a matter that needs to be very deeply considered. So for this board to just rubber stamp or push on any legislation that's in front of it when something that has been so widely discussed would be incredibly irresponsible. That's the point that I need to make to this board. And what the request is from Mr. Kasdan, from Mr. Cohen, and from myself is that we need to take the time. This board should go to the commission and say, thank you for this ordinance. We now need to please have staff and hire consultants and get architects, and let's get some smart people in the room and have them work and bring back to the planning board something that we actually think that makes sense. And then we will then send to the commission something that we think we can support as a planning board. And then the commission will then have a better piece of legislation. That's the way that things get done. You know, what's happening right now and is that there's a gross misrepresentation of what the Board of Adjustment issue is. That in and of itself is what created this whole conversation today. So while we can say this isn't about the Board of Adjustment, we are here today talking about this because of that ruling. It's irrefutable that development in our community is highly regulated and it's highly restricted. The size of new buildings is a function of setbacks, height, floor plate restrictions. Historic buildings are further hampered by this. And I'm speaking to you as the only person here who's speaking to you practically as somebody who executes this work on a day-to-day basis, not as a lawyer, not as a developer, as somebody who understands construction and how these buildings get built. This ruling by the Board of Adjustment is something that the commission and the planning department should embrace. They should look at this and say, this is something that allows historic properties that every single year, the Florida Building Code, the fire department, stairwells get bigger, elevator shafts get bigger. You're an architect. You understand all of this. It changes every single year. So what happens? We've now created a situation where the only thing that we ever build in this city is luxury housing. We build nothing that's affordable. Affordable needs efficiency. Historic buildings in North Beach, when I go and hand deliver the turkeys before Thanksgiving and I get to walk into the units that are there, some of them I can't go into because it smells so bad. Those are there is a desperate need in this city for those buildings to be able to be developed in a more sensible way. And so what Mr. Cohen was talking about in terms of the efficiency is critical. It's critical to the quality of life of the city. And looking at the ruling from the Board of Adjustment, it's a gift to the city. The city should say, this is fantastic. And the planning board should look at this the same eye towards how the quality of life for residents can be changed in a better way. The commission has a responsibility to legislate in a way that they see fit, but they're elected to help this community grow in a way that is positive in terms of quality of life. So when you talk about the pros and the cons of what's before you today and why this is such a weighty matter, let's talk about it from the sense of, well, the pros are a project actually will have no increase in underlying FAR, because we keep saying an increase in FAR. The underlying zoned FAR does not change. The way we count the FAR would change. And that's a very important point, because it sort of takes apart this fear. The point is that when you consider the quality of life benefits that come from the square footage that a project like Ocean Terrace, for example, can bring to the city, and say we can build another 20,000 square feet, because we've submitted our application after the Board of Adjustment ruling. We were planning on submitting in December. I had to tell the architects to do something. I told them design it for the BOA approval because that's the law. So we've submitted. We're not on the list. I'm not sure why. It's 20,000 square feet. You look at what that 20,000 square feet represents to the city in terms of parks, fire trucks, streetscape. These are things that we need money for. You look at things that we are going to lose. Let's say, are we losing quality of life? No, buildings don't change. The size of them doesn't change. The historic preservation requirements don't change. Nothing changes except for the fact that somebody's able to use their building in a more efficient way. The downside is that we lose this tremendous opportunity to build better projects.
All right, Senator, you got to wrap it up.
I'm going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
I'm going to cut to the chase. I just think that at the end of the day, I'm imploring you to consider this more, to think about the impact to affordable housing, to think about the impact to historic preservation, and to think about all the things that come with whatever decision you make today. And your decision should be, we want to study this, and we want to provide a thoughtful dialogue on this to the community so we can all work together. Not that we're going to push something through, because once it goes, it doesn't come back. And you all know that. You know that it's true, and that's why this is such an important decision for you to take. Thank you.
Jeff, before you go, anyone else here from the public? No one else is here to speak on this item? You are? Nancy, are you not speaking on this? You're just watching? Okay, go ahead.
I'm Jefferson Bracken, 1561 West Ave. I'm the vice chair of the Next Gen Council and chair of the Housing and Development Subcommittee. It's a council where the group makes recommendations to the city commission from the millennial type of perspective. And I'm not here speaking on the merits of the 500 Alton project either. I do believe that the Board of Adjustment ruling should be upheld, but after hearing everyone's testimony today, I do agree that the truth is that it is a really hefty issue, and it does require discussion and study. I wish that my group could meet more to discuss this, but we do need efficiency in housing, and in order to get this, we do need to study up in order to grow in a positive manner. And I ask that this be thoroughly considered. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Mr. Chair, I have a question. So in front of you stands an ordinance that was pre-prepared. And this ordinance, in a way, is a little more draconian than our current interpretation. If, in fact, you do go ahead and proceed.
Wait. What do you mean by that? Isn't it, again, like I said in the beginning, isn't it just codifying the way they've interpreted the code for 40 years?
It's a pretty complex.
What's more draconian? Matisse, you got to be specific.
Okay,
it's important.
I'll pull it out in a second, but in the meantime, I have a question. If you can make a recommendation. FAR is not, parking garages are not regulated by FAR, but yet the staircase and the elevator in the parking garage is. That, and the, for example, if you have a podium.
What was your question? You're just making more argument. I love you, but
Can you make an exclusion? If it's going to go to the board, just take out something that's so absurd that any reasonable person would understand. A staircase and elevator shaft in a parking garage, which does not regulate by FAR, should not be included, no matter what the city decides later on. That's just an absurdity.
All right. You're making further argument. You didn't have a question. But anyway, I appreciate it.
Can you make that recommendation?
I think we can do whatever we want. Yeah, we can make recommendations with the ordinance. Okay. So.
Tom, what do you say about that?
I wouldn't recommend doing that. That might be something that could perhaps be discussed at the subsequent referral, but I wouldn't recommend doing
that. Right, we have the right to, though. You're just saying.
You have the right to recommend whatever you want.
Last thing, Sandor, then we got to move
just
on.
Two facts I wanted to share. One, two of the biggest projects that the city of Miami Beach has seen in over a decade are 500 Alton and Ocean Terrace. The net change, the net effect to the city is under 50,000 square feet. It's about 20 for them and 20 for me. I just think anecdotally, that's a really great thing for you to understand anecdotally. The second thing is, we talk about the precedent, the 48 years that's been written about. Well, when the FAR was 6, people don't really have a lot of problems with it. But as the FAR goes down to 2, and I do these historic buildings all the time, and one of the things that we struggle with, and historic preservation staff struggles with, is the buildings that we revere the most have a higher FAR than the underlying zoned FAR that we have. So you can't do anything with them. And so if we're revering a structure, and then we're also at the same time saying that there's this measurement standard that has nothing to do with the way buildings look, is somehow going to cause a problem, it doesn't make any sense. You know, when the FAR is 2 and your building's 4, then yeah, maybe if some stairwells and elevator shafts get you back to 4, so then at least you can move things around and move the elevator and build a new elevator tower. That's a game changer for an adaptive reuse. And that's just two facts that I want the board to consider in terms of why this is something that needs to be so thoughtfully considered and not just pushed through.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I may, just a quick point to follow up with one of the board members' observations. The argument to do nothing today is an argument made by people who want to develop claims against the city. It's just that simple. This matter was sent to you unanimously by the City Commission, unanimously. I wanted to emphasize that fact. To the extent that people said you're going to lose an opportunity today, you're not going to lose that opportunity. You have an opportunity coming right around the corner. There was another comment made. The commission should embrace this decision by the Board of Adjustment. The commission was obviously well aware of it and decided to embrace it by sending this to you to reverse it. So by having zoning in progress today, you do what the City Commission wanted, which is to defend the city so it can make the decision on its terms.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to make one additional comment. You know, it's legitimate for the Planning Board to exercise its approval authority recommending to the referred city ordinance. And this will deter any equitable estoppel cases that will tip, which is going to up the city internally in litigation by developers who had requested additional FAR.
Okay.
You'll have FAR additional requests
and in
every application. You'll have additional FAR requests in every application.
All right, so I'm just going to make my comments, and then we can go down the line. I have, first of all, the utmost respect for you, Neeson, and Sandor. I love what you're doing, and I've been supportive of you since you've appeared on the beach and stuff, gotten to know you. That being said, I do think there is urgency for the reasons I stated earlier. I don't think it's fair if the commission's job is legislate to put the decision in the hands of a judge. I just don't think that's appropriate. So I do think there is urgency to why the city wants to do this so quickly. The issue of what FAR should be could be debated till the cows come home, and I don't disagree with that, but I think it is the right of the commission to confirm or codify the way they've been interpreting this law for 49 years. Now, you may think it's wrong, but that's the way it's been done, and I think projects that were approved all understood that. And I think the Board of Adjustments ruling kind of just woke all the developers up, say, hey, wait, maybe we can take advantage of this ruling, when in fact when their projects were approved, it was under the understanding of how the code had been interpreted for years. So that being said, I my vote is to send it on with a positive recommendation. And again, with the utmost respect for your arguments, but I just don't think it's fair to say to the city, you know, you just have to live with what they believe is an errant decision, and then letting a judge decide what the city of Miami Beach's code should be. So those are my thoughts. So, Mike, we'll just go down the row, and then we'll make a vote.
Yeah, so only a couple of questions, and then I'll share a few thoughts. So is it, Tom, when the FAR was lowered from 6, I assume, down to 2, this was the interpretation. Am I right?
Yeah, well, it's important
you,
to say.
You mentioned two situations in the 90s when it was challenged and it was upheld. I think the late 90s or sometime in the 90s.
The interpretation, the BOA interpretation, or the BOA's affirmation of the planning director's determination occurred in 1994.
That was 4 years before the downzoning. The downzoning did not take properties from 6 to 5. It took some properties from 6 to 3. The properties that went to 2 were probably at 3 or 3.5. So it was an across-the-board downzoning. The definition of FAR did not change with that downzoning. So what was counted in FAR remained the same before the downzoning and after the downzoning.
So the intent of the folks involved back in those days was this interpretation that we're discussing today.
I'm sorry, what was your question?
I'm just trying to link the thinking at that time, the FAR at that time, the 2.0 FAR defined as, in other words, the calculation of floor area at that time.
When the city was downzoned in the late 90s, it was downzoned to reduce overall intensity citywide. The intensities of the city were very, very high. There was a reaction to the size of the buildings that were being constructed. And the definition of floor area did not change. It was only the amount of floor area that you could construct.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
And I just want to add one more comment to my comments before. I do encourage strongly when we pass this ordinance on, assuming that my fellow board members agree, that there is a further discussion about this whole issue. And whether FAR should be redetermined.
So this is the second part of my.
I just want to make sure that.
Mr. Barron, may I clarify?
And if I may, I'd like as a board to us have our discussions first, please. Just let us speak. We've let everyone speak.
Yes, Mr. Vader, but the history was not accurately fully presented. If I may just take a moment to say that, because I lived through all of that. The ZORC, which process they were talking about, in which the definition of FAR was changed, was in 1989-1990. There were actually subsequent, at that time, the maximum FAR in the city was and remained 6.0 in certain districts and less in some other districts. There were two subsequent in the 90s rezonings, one in approximately 94, in which the maximum FAR went from 6.0 to 4.5, and then later in the 90s, there was a further downzoning and that went from the 4.5 to 3.0. So just for the record, at the time it was redefined FAR, the maximum FAR was 6.0.
Okay. So as a follow-up and similar to Brian's comments, I am sensitive to this idea, and the mayor, I believe, in his comments and the referral, mentioned that he wanted a robust discussion around this issue. This issue has kind of been foisted upon us by the Board of Adjustments ruling, but now that it's here, I think we need to have the discussion. To what degree can this board feel comfortable that and assure the folks that have spoken here today that conversation will take place?
So, Mike, we don't need the commission to authorize us having a discussion. We can direct the planning director to arrange for us to have a discussion on FAR whenever we'd like to.
Yeah, we
is that
could.
Correct?
If you want to direct us to place a discussion item.
Well, and let me qualify by what I'm very, I want to explore the idea that this interpretation disproportionately affects smaller and mid-size, situations, thereby hurting housing affordability in Miami Beach. I think that's a valid argument. I think it's worth exploring. An elevator's fixed size, a stairwell's a fixed size, a trash chute is a fixed size, and if the overall building is smaller, it's going to be a larger percentage of the structure, and it's going to reduce the amount of sellable or rentable square feet. So I think that conversation ought to be had, and of course resiliency considered as well.
I respectfully disagree with Mike. I think this is a blatant attempt on the part of developers. I love developers; they do good jobs. They've done a lot of help for the city, but I.
Well, let me ask you, before, to make sure I understand him. Were you saying that you think this should be studied first, or
no?
Or
no, I'm saying I'm sensitive to the idea that we ought to have control of our destiny. We ought to have you know, we've got a 50-year history, that it ought not be just abruptly changed, okay? But I also believe that now that the conversation is here, that it ought to be had in a more broad context.
Right, which is what I said.
Well, you went to the bathroom. I was adding to your.
I just didn't know if David thought you meant now or later.
And Brian, just to confirm,
one second.
Let me just confirm.
That's fine, but this is essentially a slippery slope. We're looking at a slippery slope. More and more FAR, more and more development. We don't want to wind up looking like Sunny Isles Beach. That's ultimately the Miami Beach has character. It has buildings. This zoning ordinance is, and the down zoning has what's kept this city what it is. And I don't think there should be more FAR. And it's
right.
Pretty,
no,
it's
but
a pretty
all
simple,
they're saying, David, is that that's a discussion that can be had.
It can be had. But right now, it's incumbent on this board to approve the ordinances.
And Mr.
Well, I started out my comments by you know trying to better understand the original intent of the down zoning and whether this were consistent you know with that. So I'm going to vote in favor of a positive referral, but I'm counting on you know. According to Daniel, we don't need permission, but I do believe that this ought to be a broad conversation about this interpretation and the ripples in the water. We don't want to create a situation where historic buildings, smaller, where there's no adaptive reuse. I think that's important.
Okay, before you go, Mark.
I just wanted to clarify that, as the chair said, there's not going to be any restrictions on this referral in terms of the discussion. So
Okay.
The discussion is going to be purposely broad so that we can explore all of these different issues, not just the ones that were proposed at the podium, but some of the ideas that have been expressed by the members today.
But also, we don't want to be tied up with equitable estoppel claims by...
No. Assuming it's going to go... referred with a positive recommendation with a subsequent discussion item about how FAR should be treated going forward anyway. Mark, any other comments?
We're really talking about process. I don't want to get into it because we've already beaten this horse to death. But we're really talking about process and timing of this. And so for me, I do agree with some of the arguments that were made here. However, I don't agree that the I agree that we should go back to the status quo and then let our elected officials assist in determining what our destiny is regarding FAR. So, and really, again, I love Sandor's project. I love these other projects, and I was in favor of them. But everyone went forward on these projects based upon what the status quo was back then. And so I don't see any really damage here. People are trying to – and I understand. I represent developers trying to take advantage of a decision that was made by five folks on a board of adjustment, which I don't necessarily agree with. So with that, I'm going to vote in favor of moving this forward with a favorable recommendation to the commission.
Okay. Nick?
Yeah, I agree. And I agree to a certain extent that we should embrace – the conversation that's happening now. I've, you know, long been frustrated by the idea that we can't award FAR bonuses, and I would love to, you know, discuss that, how we can incentivize that and really use that. Maybe we have to amend the city charter. I don't know what's involved in that. But, you know, I also think that, you know, Tom and staff do a great job studying impacts, and I see this decision as just being a little unpredictable. So I would argue in favor of going back to the status quo and then welcome, you know, a broad discussion about the future and how we can do better.
Daniel.
So, Tom, I know we're hopeful and reliant that the mayor is going to refer to us a further discussion. Can we as a planning board agree that starting in January we can start having a discussion about FAR?
Sure. If the board wants to have a discussion on FAR, we can have a discussion on FAR.
And I think that you have always been welcoming to that. I just want our board to understand that we can have a discussion item anytime.
Sure.
And I think that this issue has most certainly brought up a lot of things that we want to discuss about FAR. And for me, I've seen, you know, I studied the RM1. I most certainly understand the limitations of the RM1 with a 1.25 FAR. I've seen the fire code and the building code change over years. And I most certainly have seen the impact that has on the viability of a project. And looking at a city where we're dealing not so much with resiliency, but concerns over the survival of our city due to the magnitude of storms and the likeliness of storms, of storm events approaching us. It most certainly concerns me to make sure that development within the restrictions that we've applied, like the conservation district and local historic districts, that it's viable, that we can invite the private community. And I don't think that this situation is the duress we want to be under in trying to have that conversation, but I most certainly feel that it is time to have that conversation, that as codes change, so does the ability for projects, particularly smaller projects, to be viable. And I don't want to use this situation to stop development, because I think that what we're realizing is that we do have to adapt, that we do have to be resilient. And that study that Matisse had mentioned, I saw it too for the HBB board that Shulman did, and that was the right way to start having a discussion. No one restricted him from the information he's providing, and some board members didn't like what he was saying, but the truth of the matter is that that's a reality we need to start having discussions about. I most certainly don't feel that this particular situation is where I want to have that discussion. But it has brought it to light, and while the iron's hot, you want to strike. And I think that us as a planning board should prioritize not just FAR, but the viability of development in our city. Because I'm most certainly not pro-development. I am pro my community moving forward. And I need to work with the development community for that to happen. So I can't alienate when developers are trying to come in and improve my community. And I most certainly don't need to go into the fear-mongering that might take place on either side.
I think all of us share that sentiment. I think we all want to see our community move forward. What concerns me is that sometimes we don't agree on what and how the community should move forward. And I don't think we should be under duress right now because of this Board of Adjustment rule.
I agree. I mean,
and I agree that there should be further discussion somewhere down the road. There's no problem. FAR is going to be a continuing discussion all along, and whether we want more or less of it is a rather simple proposition.
But I think I'm lucky because I'm in North Beach and I got an FAR increase.
So am I.
You know, so I don't see that so easy in the future. What I don't like about this situation is that so many unknowns. I agree. The loophole has to be closed because I keep on asking all these questions about if this happens, what if this happens, and no one really knows.
I'm certainly not anti-development.
I agree, and if I can,
a lot of the projects.
And I'm not saying any of us are anti-development. I'm just trying to understand that we don't have an easy way to increase FAR, and I think that the development community is seeing this as an opportunity to increase FAR. I think that there's too much risk in the way that we're increasing FAR by an interpretation as we've discussed here today. I most certainly feel that if we're going to increase FAR and it be targeted in the areas where we need it, that we need a commitment from the city to do that study. And ultimately, it's going to go to the voters for the voters to approve that to happen. And that's going to be dependent on how good of an argument we pose and how thorough of a process we engage in to convince them that that's important, as we did in North Beach. As in North Beach, we were able to convince residents citywide of the importance of giving us that increase in FAR because it was necessary for our community to move forward, and we were able to do that. So, you know, I most certainly have a lot of questions as to the implications of the BOA, and as I explained to you earlier, if a judge does rule in favor of the BOA, does that mean we still need to go back to residents and get their approval in order to be able to implement that judge's ruling? And all that concerns me very much so. But what I need is a commitment from the city to understand that we have all of these design envelope criteria. I know it firsthand because in the conservation district, we revised the RM1 to have an overlay, which is a conservation district, which regulated the envelope of a building. So I don't think we should be so fearful of FAR as far as increasing density. I don't think we should be so fearful that we're all of a sudden going to have these monstrosity buildings. We have setbacks. We have height restrictions. We have other restrictions. But I do think it needs to be done in the right way, and it needs to be done very thoughtfully by this board, and this board should maintain its willingness to engage in that conversation. I will certainly hope that the commission agrees that this is the right board to have that, and that the referral does come back to us with the full support of the commission, with the full support of staff, so that we can get specialists, so that we can hire analysts, and we can really look at the best possible way to have this discussion and implement that in a way that we can get support for it.
Yeah, I just want to let everyone speak. Kareem?
Yeah, let me, you know, I hear a lot of things about this board being a rubber stamp board and all of this stuff, you know, and I think we take a lot of time to really contemplate some of the things that are coming before us. And a lot of times we do answer yes on certain things because we've had the opportunity to have discussion and put proper input to it, and in many cases alter something that came before us to have something better that we can think would be better for the city, which in turn really makes everyone sitting up here pro-City of Miami Beach at the end of the day. That's why we're here. That's why we're serving on this board. So I did want to address that. You know, the history of the issue for 40 years for me is, you know, where I can't not move the item forward back to the commission. I think, you know, the developer was very, very smart and you know, much more smart than I am to look at the voids of the building and the definition of the floor area or the floors. So, you know, when you looked at that and you read it that way and you take those voids out, it gave you additional area to use. And I think that was a smart thing to do. And, you know, I'm pro-developer. I do this for a living. But that being said, it's not in line with what we were doing here in the city. So a lot of folks spoke today about some of the things that we can do better as a city. I heard affordable housing. I heard other caveats, maybe, you know, smaller buildings versus larger buildings. The size of the building of the developer in question is what allowed the opportunity, because had it been a shorter building, this would not even be a conversation, right? So I think that we do need to have these conversations. There's a lot of opportunity to bring up some really good things. I am sure the project in question that started this whole thing at the Board of Adjustments, which, in my opinion, the Board of Adjustments said the city has the right to clarify its code. And I think that's what we're being asked here to do, clarify the interpretation. And I think when I read Section 114-1, where the planning staff has made the language available, I think it clarifies, it codifies what the intention is. And with that said, I think we have more work to do. I think that there are opportunities to make the city better. There are certainly opportunities to bring back some provisions for affordable housing, as well as discussion on how we treat FAR for certain projects or for certain areas. That said, we need to have uniformity in some things all across the city. And then in other places, there is opportunity to diverge and make provisions for certain things, whether that be in exemptions, variances, relaxations of FAR, or other additional incentives. So with that said, I will make the motion to move this back to the city with a favorable recommendation.
Okay. Can I get a second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody. Neeson, thank you. Jeff, thank you. I think we're adjourned, right? Okay.
Happy holidays, everybody.